Production. Recorded live.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our conference call. This is, episode 15. And tonight we're going to look at the law of the case. And I guess everybody knows by now, and especially if you listen to our first call back 12 weeks ago or so, you know, where we describe the purpose of the room, what we're doing here. We're really trying to teach people about the judicial process and the political process, and going through court cases. We're going to go through our law of the case tonight, and the law of the case is something that we use for every case. It remains the same. The only thing we change is only the names are different, and we definitely put the correct names in there so we don't protect the criminals. But in any event, we're going to look at that, and once you come to an understanding of that paper and what it's all about, and really come to an appreciation, you're going to understand what a court of record is, because that's what it's for. It's to define for the judge what a court of record is and to give him the necessary case law and laws and constitution to make him to understand these things and to obey. But it does take a while to wake them up to realize that there's something else going on other than their little world of statutes and control that they have over the people. So anyway, we're going to look at that tonight. We're going to go through detail, you know, point by point to some degree. I'm just going to go through it very quickly and kind of just hit the headlines in here. If you notice on our papers, we have a certain layout. If you look at our case, there is a layout, and there's a sort of a formula or a framework. So if you look at the title, that's the framework. And you look at those items. We start off with just going into the case for a moment. We start off basically introducing what it is we're here for. We make the fact that we tell them who we are, we're the people, which is one of the major points. And we're the people of New York, and we make the point that this is a court of record. We tell them who we're suing and what we're suing them for, and then we lay out, and we mention basically some of the charges or the causes of action. The very next thing we do is we establish the jurisdiction. In this case, it was pretty easy to establish. So those who haven't seen that case, we got the latest up this morning, refreshed the page a few times before you download it, and you should download it and read it later. But anyway, we then go to the jurisdiction, and then let's see, after that we go into, there's a couple of different ways you can go, but I think I go in there into the points of making the allegations, and then I think we establish first the fact that this is a common law procedure, then I think we went into the allegations, and then we start to back up with titles and plenty of information and proof in each one of those titles to support our allegations and what we're suing for and why we should get what we're getting. And so if you go through it very carefully, you'll see how it's laid out. We have all the evidence up front in our papers. This paper is called a pleading. So when you take our course, anybody who does take our course, which everyone should, you go up on newyorkcommitteeman.org, click on the judicial process, and then click on, I think it says, let me take a real quick look. So yeah, if you click on the judicial process, it says court access. I might change that tab to say, a course or something in order to learn the procedure. The course we give is a procedure course, and then, of course, we do have the common law course, which is given in lectures on audio by Bill Thornton. And everyone needs to do that. Shame on us if we don't, because if we can't represent ourselves and protect ourselves, and I don't want to use the word represent, if we can't be in our own person in court, and answer for ourselves, and we're going to give that up to a lawyer, you're in trouble, because you're never going to get common law. You're never going to get justice. You're just going to get a backroom deal is what you're going to get. So, it's also called a raw deal. So anyway, people should look at that, and maybe if we want, maybe we'll discuss that, the anatomy. The anatomy of a complaint or an action at law. Maybe we'll discuss that maybe next week or the week after. But tonight we're going to look at the law of the case. And up on the top of this, you'll see we put down judicial cognizance. We want the justice or the magistrate, whatever you want to call him, we want him to understand that he's being put on notice. So judicial cognizance, this is a notice to the judge. And as a matter of fact, we kind of taken the position and strategy on our next case, which is the gun case, where we'll be going up before the court as quick as possible. We're going to call for a conference so that we could discuss the process of timing with the court. We want to put the judge immediately, as fast as possible, into his place so he understands his purpose and his role within the courtroom. And so that's what this paper is all about. It's for him to understand his role. He is not coming in as a judge. He's coming in as a magistrate. And that's why we don't put judge in our paper anymore. We put magistrate. And we want him to understand his role and how it is that he is supposed to respond. He is the administrator only. And it's going to take a little while to get them to behave and do the right thing, but we'll work on that. But anyway, I think what we have to do is challenge them to the point where they don't know how to respond, because they have no clue what we're talking about. But eventually the judges should figure this out. So we want to call the judge in on the carpet right away. First thing we want to do is ask them if they read the paperwork. They almost always say, I haven't read them yet, you know. Well, maybe we should adjourn for a half hour so you can go read it, because we cannot go forward. Because in that paperwork defines your purpose in this courtroom and how what your job will be. And you have to understand that. And if you don't know how this process works in a common law court of record, you need to go study it, because I'm sure you've never been in that kind of a court before. They've been in the civil courts. So we haven't figured out exactly how we're going to approach them on that, but this is kind of the idea. But we want to put that battle up front, first and foremost. And we don't move in the court case until we make that guy to understand what his role is in the courtroom. Now, we're coming in, and it looks like we're going to easily be 1,000 people in this case. So that's really great news. I would be happy if we got 100, but it looks like we're going to hit the 1,000 mark. And I've been getting calls from different places and even some support from people outside of the state, and they're recognizing the importance of what's going on here in New York and how important it is for us to win our case. And so some people are supporting us from outside the state. And of course, they've got their own problems, and they want to try to, follow our lead if we're successful. And so that's kind of good news. The point is that this word is getting out. I'm getting calls from all over the state, different people doing different things. They're interested, and we'll see how that comes. If I can read that kind of, read that situation a little bit, I might be able to say we're going to get maybe 2,000 signatures. But the key thing to this is that this case is so important. Our liberty rests on this case. This is it. This is the line in the sand. We must not allow them, first of all, to go one step further, especially with this stupid SAFE Act. We cannot allow that. It must not stand. We cannot allow them to push any further. And we can't just push them to the point of stopping where they're at. No, we got to push them all the way back to the beginning. We need to take all of our right back. What worth is half of our right? We need it all. We need the right to bear arms without them counting us and numbering us and figure out how many guns we have and where they're located. It's none of their business. That's my personal property and has nothing to do with them. None of their business. And this is the attitude we have to get, and this is where we have to bring them to. And so we must do that, okay? Liberty depends on it. This is the line in the sand. So with that said, I really want to encourage everyone in this room and any influence you have on anyone else to get the word out that people need to get involved, but they also have to come to the case. We have got to overwhelm the courtrooms like they've never been overwhelmed before. People need to take days off from work. They're going to have to start saving money. If you can't afford to take your days off from work, start putting a few bucks aside right now so you can plan on 2 or 3 or 4 days over the course of the next 6 months. That's all it's going to take is a few days, to come into courtroom. we want this courtroom so crowded that they're going to have to run down the street and see if the legislation hall is open or something so that we can go there to have our, and that may not be big enough. They may have to rent a stadium or something. I don't know. But let's hope we can get to that point. But that's how much we want to overwhelm them. We want them to know the people are there, okay? And we're going to decide on the case. You know, it's kind of strange to some people to think that we get to decide the case. You say, oh, wait a second. How is it that? Well, we're the sovereign. Why do we let the state decide anything about our rights? It's not their business, okay? We're above the state. We're above the Constitution. We are the creators of the Constitution. We ordained, we established the Constitution for the United States of America, for the state of New York. We did it, okay? So why do we go and have a problem with some bureaucrat and a problem with some government agency where they break the law, they don't obey the law, and then we're going to go to another government-paid individual, a judge, he's paid by the government, who wants status quo, and it's been nothing but our experiences to see that these judges want nothing but status quo, and they're willing to break the law and say things like we have no cause of action. Well, breaking the law is a cause of action. It's a violation upon the right of the person who is injured, period, end of subject, okay? And when they go and turn around and they ignore the fact that the law is broken, they don't stop and correct it, well, they now become part of that conspiracy. And every judge involved in the past at this point is going to get a lawsuit. They're going to be sued, and we're going to sue them criminally, and we're going to sue them civilly. And we need to make an example out of them. They can't do these things. But anyway, why should they decide? Court of record makes so much sense that we should decide. And we just have to put on a good show. I mean, if you can get 1,000 people like we have, and I think we're going to have, and maybe more, and we all agree, you know, we put on a good show, and everybody says, hey, you know, we put on a good show. We covered all the bases. We made it clear, to the point. There's, no one could argue what we laid out, so we have every right to make the ruling because that's what a court case is all about. You know, anybody who hasn't listened to the tapes of Thornton, he lays out the purpose of a court and how it works, and he tells a story about a king. I don't want to go into that story, but he gives two scenarios about a king who deals with a person who breaks the law and dealing with his brother. And in one case, the brother poisons the king because he's the cook, because he did bad to his brother. But on the other case, when he gets another scenario, because he made a good show in the court, okay, the brother didn't poison the king because he went to see his brother. He said, no, you were wrong. The king was right. You were wrong. So the other one, the brother was right. The king didn't make a good show. So that's what we have to do. We have to put on a good show. We have to show without a shadow of a doubt that we're right. These are our rights. We have a right to protect ourselves. We have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right to bear arms. We have a right to be armed at all times and not be worried about anyone, assaulting us in any way. And again, you know, right up front, and I think our court case lays this out very clear, right up front, okay, the purpose of guns and the purpose of the Second Amendment, the purpose of the fact that we want to bear arms is to protect ourselves from them, from tyranny. That's what it's all about. And we are the last country of the world, I believe. I was talking with somebody over the weekend, and we were talking about Switzerland and what other countries might be armed. Well, it turns out very strange about Switzerland, which we know is really the banker's little playground for their money. But in any event, those people get to keep their guns, but they're all numbered. Everybody knows what they got, where they're at, and they don't have any bullets. They have to go get the bullets when it's necessary. But they don't have bullets, so they're not really armed. We're the last one. We are the last one, and history has shown us over and over and over again, without fail, no exceptions to this rule. First order of business when a government goes and starts to do gun control, they're numbering and figuring out where the guns are, then they start confiscating. They do it very small in the beginning, and you don't even realize it's happening. And next thing you know, they're coming out hardcore, and they take your guns, and then they come out and kill you because they're getting rid of their political enemies. They're getting rid of the people that's causing them problems for their little New World Order. And so that's the history, every time it's the same thing. 20th century alone, 9 countries did this. 9 countries killed their people, over 170 million people. And I've heard from other sources that that's a low number. But we'll stick with the low number. I think that's pretty damn a lot of people, 170 million people. And to put that into real, you know, kind of a real appreciation, all the wars of the same century, the 20th century, only 35 million people died. Not that it's only, but 35 million. That means that innocent people were killed, what, 4 times or 5 times, whatever the multiple is, or more by governments. And these are unarmed people. They're led from sheep to the slaughter. So that's why we want our guns. And we have to be right up front. We have to be bold, and we have to say it for tyranny, period. Not for hunting. Yeah, that's nice. We like it. Yeah, it's not for sport. Yeah, we like that too. And that makes us better at being able to handle our guns. But it's for tyranny. It's for them. It's that simple. As long as we have it, it's a deterrence. The moment we lose it, we're in trouble. We're dead. We're done. All right, anyway, enough of my speech here. I didn't mean to go off on that tangent. But let's go back to this paper, Judicial Cognizance. One of the first things we want to let them know is that they don't have immunity. The moment they step outside of their authority, they lost it, and we're coming out to get them. I don't know if this paper, if I wrote it strong enough, because this was a while back, and my mindset wasn't as strong as it is now towards the fact that we want to let them know we're coming out after them if they break the law. But we do that in our paper itself, our action at law. We may go back and kind of put a little more teeth in this one on that idea. Immunity. He's going to lose his immunity the moment he steps outside of his authority. Page 2 of 16, sovereignty. Okay, we want to let them know who the sovereign of the court is. And, of course, that is us. And we give a couple of pages of that. If you pop up to page 4, we want to let them know what our rights are and what a right is. Okay, and we give almost 2 pages of that. And then we want to let them, on page 5, we tell them what the law is. But first of all, we want to make it clear to them that statutes are not law. If you want to know what the law is, come ask me, and I'll let you know. Because that's what a king does. A king makes the law up as he goes. He makes it up as it's necessary. And so that's what we need to be doing. We focus in on righteousness and what is right and wrong. We work off the facts. We discover the maxims that will support our case. We discover the case law that will support our case. And we even establish the statutes that will support our case. Statutes have a purpose, and we talk about that. I don't know whether we talk about it in this paper, but we do talk about it in every case that we have in the action that we write, which is some people call the complaint. In civil law, they call it the complaint. In common law, they call it an action at law. So, you know, we make the point, these points in the action at law, and we let them know what the law is. And that's why we write these papers. We're telling them what the law is. We're telling them what this case is all about. But statutes are law also, and we lay that out, and we tell them that, you know, statutes are law for bureaucrats, for government agencies, for elected officials, for appointed individuals. Even also for commercial, you know, make statutes for commercial use between states, but it's not to prevent business from going through the states, and not to control it in any way, but to make sure it flows. That's the point. And any, like, you know, you'll see situations where they won't allow certain insurance companies to come into certain states or other different businesses, and that's all a game that's being played by big business in order for them to monopolize on these different industries. That's got to stop. That's criminal. It's illegal. And we're going to stop that, hopefully, when we get into power here. Page 6, we define what a court is. Because let me tell you, they do not know what a court is. Okay? So we define it, and it's very, very, very clear. The court is the person in the suit of the sovereign. It's the place where the sovereign sojourns, where his regal retinue, don't know how to pronounce that. Well, I did know, I forgot. Retinue. Anyway, wherever that may be. But the point is, he comes in with his suit, with his people, with his evidence. the court belongs to the sovereign. We define what a court of record is and what makes up a court of record. It takes a couple of pages to lay that out, but generally speaking, on page 8, we kind of listed out what a court of record is, the conclusion from the definitions that we do lay out to this paper, that a court of record first generally has a seal. We do have a seal. We went out and got seals so that when we make a decision in the court, we put our seal on it. And if anybody wants to know what our seal is like, we should put one online. If we don't have one, we'll put one up there. I'll have to pull mine out to remember exactly, but I know it says something like court of record on it, and it says natural law, I think, by the grace of God, if I recall. And it's said in Latin. You do it in Latin. And so it looks kind of nice. And in the center, I know what I did, and a lot of other people do also, is just put the year I was born, okay? And you can let others use your seal. And we'll talk about that if people want to talk about the seal. But anyway, a court of record has a seal, okay? The court of record has a power to fine or imprison for contempt. A court of record keeps a record of the proceedings. A court of record proceeds according to the common law, not statutes or codes, except for when we exercise them into the system, into the court. And the tribunal, that's us, is independent of the magistrate. So the magistrate has only administrative function. He doesn't get to decide innocent or guilty. That's what we do. Okay? And let's see. And that's a very important point. Again, you know, we have a thousand, isn't it better that 1,000 sovereign people, 1,000 people get to make the decision and not one silly judge who's going to keep the status quo and continue giving us the problem that we have. Let's see. Up on page 10, we lay out the position of the magistrate and who and what the magistrate is. So we get to put him into his place so he can understand what his role is in our court case. The idea is we're coming into the court, and for the $305 that it costs to open a court case, it's $205, no, $210 to get an index number, and that covers all of the paperwork filing and the maintaining of the filing of our case in the records down in the clerk. So that's what that covers, the $210. And that's a pretty reasonable price, I think. It charges, and this is a real good deal, $95. For $95, we get this nice big room, and we get a magistrate up there to administer justice, you know, administer the justice as we will it. We get a stenographer, we get a bailiff, and we might get another individual there, maybe the court clerk. Okay, so and we get all that for $95. Well, that's a pretty good deal. It costs us $45 every time we go back in there to make a motion in the court. That's not bad. So. It's a pretty good deal, I think, ultimately, when you look at the cost, $310, you know, to pay for the court process. Page 11, we define the suit, we define the tribunal, and we talk about the record that they think they keep what's called a minute order. The real case is the paper, it's called the pleadings. It's what we write on paper, and it's what they write on paper. And as that argument goes back and forth on paper, that is the trial in common law. And now that is expressed verbally if there is a jury. In our case, we're not asking for a jury. We're coming as 1,000 sovereign individuals, as kings, to take our rights back. We're going to take out the axe, and we're going to make the judge sign. And that's the point I'm making for those who may not realize is we're talking about how they did it with the Magna Carta, and they only did that with 25 freemen, which is where they get the number for a grand jury, 25. Let's see, page 12, page 13, we talk a little more about the minute, we talk about the state, 14, constitutional preambles, 15 continues on, and 16 ends up with government. What a government, what a form of government there are. We are a republic, we're not a democracy, and we define the two. And that's the case law. And any judge who goes through this and reads this very carefully and checks out all the citations and reads all the footnotes, if there be any in this one, I do have some footnotes here. Most of it is real meat right in the body of the paper. But in any event, if he's careful to go through that, he will discover what his role is. And if he's not careful, then we're going to have to do a writ of mandamus. Now, we've had a problem with a writ of mandamus because, again, we're learning. And it's taken us 5.5 months to get up to the appellate court, which is absurd. I've argued with numerous people during the process of time saying, this is crazy. These people don't even know what a writ of mandamus is, unless they're pulling my leg and they're trying to just deceive me. They have no clue. And the Attorney General's office has no clue what a writ of mandamus is. Okay, all they have to do is look it up. I mean, a writ of mandamus is an extraordinary writ. That's what it's defined as, an extraordinary writ. And its purpose is for a higher court to order a lower court to do something, usually to obey a particular law that they're not obeying. And that's what a writ of mandamus is. I've searched out everywhere trying to figure out how to push this case forward quicker. 5.5 months in limbo. We're in the trial level, and we're sitting here for 5.5 months because these people will not allow us to get into the court system quicker on an emergency situation, which is called an extraordinary writ. Okay? That's the point. And it dawned on me, well, maybe there's a federal procedure. Let me go look that up. I don't know why it took so long for me to think that, but I finally came to my mind, you know. And so I went out looking into the federal courts, and lo and behold, they have rules. They got it all laid out. They define it. It's clear as a bell. And there is U.S. code to the Supreme Court. That includes the state Supreme Courts. They are breaking the law. Now, we've informed them. I just wrote a notice and demand for them to take note of this, and we also put in here the fact that they're in dishonor. We laid out the point that we're 5.5 months in, and we've been sitting down fermenting in a trial court going nowhere, okay? And every day for 5.5 months, every single day, multiply that, we'll find the amount of days that is, and we have been damaged every single day, and they have damaged us. Now, the appellate court has damaged us, and if they don't do the right thing in the next 5 to 10 days, then we're going to sue the appellate court too. There's no other way to get, and we're going to sue the judges. We're not going to sue the court. We're going to sue the judges because that's the only way to go. So, the writ of mandamus, we figured that out, and it's a process that when you run into a problem with a judge, like we're probably going to run into in this court case with the gun lawsuit, we're going to hit that right up front. And we're going to push real quick for a writ of mandamus, and we're going to demand that it gets through the system within 7 to 14 days or 20 days, whatever the federal guidelines are. I don't think that they gave a particular guidelines, but they did call an emergency writ, an extraordinary writ, to take precedence over all civil cases, okay, which means get in there quick. And as a matter of fact, we've got all this paperwork going back and forth. That wasn't necessary. The judge gets to write a paper only if the appellate court invites him to write a paper. We file for a petition for the writ. They look at it. They decide whether the judge needs to say something or not, whether they want to hear from him or not. And then they would tell him, okay, you know, if you want to respond to this, you got 10 days, you got 5 days, whatever it is, some small period of time. And then they would respond. And then they would make their decision on the case. But it's so cut and dry. It's only a matter of law. There is no debate, there's no argument, there's no need for paper to go back and forth. It's just a matter of documenting the fact, this is what's going on, this is what they're not doing, but we need them to do that for the case, for the trial to go forward, and until that happens, we can't move forward. And they look at that and they say, ah, okay, yeah, that's the law, yeah, he's not obeying it, okay. And then they send a writ of mandamus down to the judge, obey, or you're done, okay. It's an order from his superiors. So, they, by the way, this is a sabotage, in my opinion, because this was removed. The writ of mandamus and the habeas corpus, the writ for a habeas corpus, that has been removed from the procedures in the state of New York in 1939. So I don't know if people realize what was going on in 38 and 39 here in New York, particularly in the cities, or all the movement towards Nazi movements down in the city and various other places throughout the country. Major changes in our Constitution. We have a lot of garbage in there now. And we've been watered down. We do not have in our Constitution, in the New York State Constitution, we do not have any place in our Bill of Rights or any place that makes the point that we have a right to bear arms. It's not in our Constitution. We need to get it in the Constitution. Well, it's not all that important because we have it in the U.S. Constitution, and that's the trump of all. That is the law of the land above all things. So we have it in the Bill of Rights. All right, anyway. I went way overboard. I apologize for going so long. I guess I got a little lost in a few of these issues. But let me open up the lines here, and we are unmuted now, so anybody has comments, questions, or anything to share? Go right ahead.
Hello, John. This is Hisham from Staten Island.
Hey, how you doing, Hisham? Good to see you and hear you.
Good evening, everyone. So I have a few short questions. One is the affidavit that you want for the case. You're still taking, right?
Yes.
Okay, so on the top it says affidavit of, and it's blank. What do you want us to write on that?
Well, your name.
I'm sorry?
Affidavit of your name, yeah. You write your name there.
Oh, of my name, okay. So right. I write affidavit of my name, and then I, my name.
Again, yep.
Okay, very good. The other thing is, in the beginning of the law of the case, it says against Governor Andrew Cuomo by name.
Yes.
I want to understand why is that done instead of just the office of the governor, like.
Because it's very difficult to sue the state. It's very difficult to get attention, and we're going to threaten them with criminal liabilities should they not obey the court. So we're not. We discussed. This is a great strategy, and it's a good question. We learned this strategy, of course, from Bill Thornton. And you know, instead of suing the agency, which is a non-being, nobody's responsible, who cares, and they go through all this craziness, okay, sue the people who are abusing their authority in the agency. Look, there's nothing wrong with the agency. There's nothing wrong with the state structure, all of the political, places that are available, you know, for a politician to fill. A seat, the way they work, what they're supposed to do, the statutes concerning what, you know, which is sort of like policies and procedures. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff. It's great. If you really look at the thing is they're not obeying the stuff. They're not obeying the statutes. They're not obeying their oaths. They're not keeping their oaths. Well, it's not the government structure that's the problem. It's the people in the government that's the problem. That's where the enemy is in the top. And they have sedated all these people, and they have a real bad attitude about you and me. We come in, and we're supposed to be good little puppets and children, and we're supposed to say, Mommy, Daddy, can we have that? No, you can't have that. Well, I'll give you this. Go on your little way. And you're supposed to leave and be very quiet and thank them and genuflect as you leave and go on. You make one point. Say, excuse me, I would like to have this. Give me a few minutes and go get that now. But that's it. You're done. They're all over your case. They treat you like a piece of crap. It goes on and on and on. And this is not just with the bureaucrat like the clerk, the town clerk, or the county clerk, or the court clerk, or the clerk up in when you go to get a permit to get a gun. The silly little slaves that we are that we do that. But in any event, it's not only with those people. It's with the judge. It's with the sheriff. It's with everybody. It's with our assemblymen, our New York Senate, our U.S. They hold us in disdain, okay? So we're not suing the agency. There's nothing wrong with the agency. We're suing the person. And once you get two people working together, you got a conspiracy and you got a criminal action.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you're being prosecuted in a town court, and the judge is not being obedient to the law, you're saying, hey, you don't have jurisdiction, you can't go no further, you're barred, and they ignore that, and they conspire, because that's what they do. They conspire with the prosecutor, and you know, maybe the sheriff might even get involved in that. But the prosecutor, at least, and the prosecutor and the judge. That's it, conspiracy. And you know what? When you have a conspiracy in a court, it's called vindictive prosecution. And when you have vindictive prosecution, tables turned. That's it. They're guilty. They are guilty, and they deserve whatever they can get. They have to prove that they're innocent now. And you to and this is what they've done to us. They've created all these nisi prius courts. They've made us all guilty, having to try to prove our innocence. It's not like it's, you know, when you go into a common law court, you're innocent until proven guilty. No, no, no. In these nisi prius courts, you are guilty. You must prove your innocence. They won't tell you that, but that's a fact, okay? Because no matter what happens, the end result is you're going to be thanking him for the jail sentence as you leave the courtroom, or for the big fat fine he gives you, or whatever it is that he gives you. Well, we're going to turn these tables around. Let them see what it's like to be guilty and have to prove themselves innocent, because that's what common law says. They are guilty and have to prove their innocence if it's vindictive prosecution.
Okay, my last question for now, I'll mute myself after. By the same extension, why then you're saying Governor Andrew Cuomo, New York State Assembly, New York State Senate, why not, right, for example, name some members of and named below in, you know, exhibit.
Well, that's a good idea. You know what? I think that's a very good idea. I'm going to make a correction in there. We're not going to put all their names in there. We'll leave New York Senate, and we'll leave, you know, the assembly. But we'll put a little note in, and we have the ETL, so we'll put a little note in there. We'll put a little note in there maybe that somewhere will be a list of all the people in the assembly and all the people in the Senate, so we get them personally in there. So that's a good idea. I will do that. Thank you. I'll make a note of that to add that. Anything else, Hesham?
No, thanks for now.
Hey, mic's open. Anybody want to pick it up? You can talk.
Hey, John. This is Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Chris? Good to hear
hey.
You.
I have a feeling I know how you're going to respond to this, but I was I was curious what you thought about soliciting people to sign off as plaintiffs that are in the state legislature, because there are some
that
people.
That would correct them. I mean, because right now, we do have lines in there that makes them as guilty as everyone else, because they saw a crime being committed. They saw the people's rights being trampled on. They
right.
saw that. And they didn't step up. You know, they made their vote, okay, when they shouldn't even have made their vote. They should have said, wait a second, you can't do that. Okay.
Well, there's two kind of constitutional criminals, and one is whether they did it with conscience or not. Either way, they should be out of there if they don't correct themselves. Stuart Rhodes goes over that in one of his speeches. If you watch the movies, he talks about whether or not they did it with cognizance or not. And many of them did it without cognizance. And as far as I'm concerned, if you can vote for a bill without cognizance, I don't want you representing me. That's my take.
Yeah, so in any event, yeah, there's a degree of guilt. They're not as guilty as those who voted for it, but they're guilty in the fact they violated, I think it is U.S. Code 42, and someone maybe can look this up and correct me. It could have been 18, but I think it's 42, 1986. I think that's the code number, which that code says that any officer or anybody that is in a position that sees a crime being committed or a violation of someone's rights and doesn't do anything and has the power to do something about it, to stop it, to correct it, to prevent it, and doesn't, becomes part of the conspiracy and also can become now a defendant. So, yes, their sin is lesser, and I don't care that they may be ignorant. Oh, I didn't know. I couldn't care less. Hey, when you go to court and they've been playing all these games, oh, I didn't know that was a law. Well, tough. You know, ignorance is no excuse to the law, you know, and that's a lie from hell, because you shouldn't have to be ignorant to any law, because laws are written in the hearts of men. Thou shalt not steal, don't kill, you know, you don't violate another human being. It's that simple. That's the law. Everybody knows the law, okay? But when they come up with all these priestly systems up, when only the priests know what's going on and what the law is, everybody in this room is a lawbreaker. Every single person in this room could go to jail tomorrow morning. If they come and investigate your life, they will find out that you're a lawbreaker. Because you, really, I'll call them a code breaker or a statute breaker. They'll call you a lawbreaker. And they can put you in jail for that. That's what they want. That's the point of all this. They can put you in jail anytime they want. Okay? They just got to figure out what it is you're doing in life and look for the codes that would deal with you. Ah, there you go. You're going to jail. And so that's the game they play. So, but anyway, we wrote into our paperwork all of these people. And so those who even voted against it shouldn't have voted at all. They should have said, no, you can't vote for this. And if they would have went forward without their vote, they should have filed a paper and an injunction in the court and say, they can't do this. This is unconstitutional. They don't have the authority. They should be making this battle, not us. Okay? But they didn't do it.
So as bizarre as such a thing might be, what if, I mean, would you be against?
Absolutely not. No, if they want to sign in, welcome aboard, and we'll remove their name.
Remove their name from the defendants?
From being a defendant. If they get on board to sign on with us, they're not a defendant no more.
Okay.
They're now a plaintiff along with us. So if you can get these people to come on board, if you can make phone calls, they'll get a movement.
I wonder what the kind of name they have for that action. If you sign on, we remove your name as a defendant.
Well, look at
that.
They sign,
like,
let's put it this way. Let's do it a different way. Let's not say it that way. If they want to become a plaintiff, well, obviously they'll no longer be a defendant. That's the way to put it.
Either way, it's good. I mean, listen, that's what court's about. I mean, most cases get decided before they go to court. People make deals, and that's why they make deals. Because if they go through all the way through, they have to pay the fine that you're asking. They have to pay what you're asking in your wherefore clause. They make a deal before you get there, then they may not have to pay what's in the wherefore clause, right?
That's right.
It's part of the process.
So if I were to go to any of these representatives in the legislature and inform them of this opportunity and solicit their support of it by signing on as a plaintiff, is that going to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak?
Oh, no. Don't worry about that. Absolutely not.
No, we want the cat out of the bag on
this, right.
Because
this
we want
the
them
time.
All jumping
yes.
over each other's shoulders to get them signed up to get off.
That, you know, the cat out of the bag, I don't know if you remember that little novelty thing they had with a burlap bag and they got a cat's tail coming out of it and there's some little vibrating thing in there and you push a little button and it's going, meow, trying to get, that's where they're going to be very shortly. They're going to be meowing that cat in the bag.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but that's a good idea. Anybody who wants to do that and do that job, because, you know, start calling around, talk with others. You know, we need to be invited to places to talk about this this gun lawsuit. We're going to start pushing that kind of thing throughout the state, maybe get 5 or 6 different locations where people can come together and hear, and we'll talk about this case as the case is in process and going. The safety, of course, is within the numbers. That's why I'm very happy to have 1,000 people on board, because I think that's where we're going to hit, 1,000 people. I, you know, we're not there yet, but it's coming. And there's a big to-do up in Albany on the 28th. Anybody that can come up to the Albany on the 28th, come over to our table, grab some papers, and maybe hand some papers out with others, and then point the people over to our table so they can sign up right now to become plaintiffs. I happen to know that there are 50 buses scheduled throughout the state that we know of, 50 buses scheduled throughout the state. That'll be heading to Albany on the 28th, which is a Thursday. That's huge, 50 buses. If you have an average of 50 people on a bus, that's 2,500 people alone. So we know that we're going to get maybe about 2,000 people coming in on buses, maybe more at least, okay? And that doesn't include the people who live in the neighborhood, around the area, people coming by cars, and so on and so forth. So I think this is going to be a decent rally. I think we're definitely looking into the many thousands, 5,000, who knows, maybe even a lot more than that. But I'd venture to say 5,000. Now, if we can get half of those people or a third of those people to come over to our table and sign up, we're going to be there early. We're going to have plenty of papers to hand out. And again, we'll need an army of people to come to the table, maybe grab 100 flyers or something, go to every, you know, we'll logically lay it out section-wise, and we go out and make sure we get a flyer in everyone's hand, and we tell them, look, if this is interest of you, it's very important, and if this is an interest of you, table's right over there, you can sign up as a plaintiff right now. Because, we're, as a matter of fact, we purposely pushed the deadline of this court case, you know, filing of this case, off until the end of the month because we wanted to make this rally to get that last oomph. We also have a rally. There's a rally going on down in Westchester County. I'll post it up on our sites, all the meetup groups, that and people can pick it up and run to other meetup groups. And I'll also run it through my mailing list. We have a few thousand people on the mailing list. And to give the information of the Westchester Gun Rally, which is going to be next Saturday, or shall I say this coming Saturday. Yes, the rally is the 23rd at 11 a.m., actually 12 o'clock, but 11 a.m., the 23rd, I think in White Plains, down in Westchester County.
That's,
so,
that's probably going to be real big Saturday. You know,
that should be pretty decent, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to be down there. We were invited down to that one to set up a table, so we're going down to set a table up. And we got a big banner we created, and we'll stick it on the table so people will identify us and see us quickly. And we're going to be busy signing people up all day long. So anybody who can come down and help, and anybody going to a meeting, okay, you got a meeting going on. You can go to a gun meeting or something. Maybe you go to a gun association. I went to a gun association. I went down to the gun store, okay, and I dropped papers off there, and I started talking with the owner of the shop, and everybody in the shop stopped and listened because they were interested in what we were talking about, which is this this lawsuit. And he took papers, and he wanted more papers, and he says, I'm going to have 1,000 people for you. Okay? Well, I said, oh, okay. So we'll see how that comes out. I got to give him a call. That was a couple of days ago. And then I went out. I was invited over to a gun association club. And in the beginning of their meeting, you know, they invited me up to speak. He gave me a couple of minutes. I must have went on 15 minutes at least, and they called me up a second time. So we had quite a bit going on with that. They were very interested, and that's where the people are just being woken up. That's where we got to go. We got to go join your gun association, your local gun association, and wake them up. It's easy to wake them up now because they're coming out because of the gun laws, and they're primed. And as a matter of fact, they all know something's wrong, but they haven't moved into the Liberty Groups yet. They haven't figured it out yet. And so as soon as you bring it up, that's it. Yeah, you're right. That's it. They'll know. Okay? So we can wake people up there. We can hand out flyers there. You can tell them that if they want a presentation, hey, go to the contact page on newyorkcommittymen.org. Give me a call. We'll go out and give them a presentation. And if you feel comfortable to give them a little speech, give them a speech. And let's push it on. But we got to get paper. We got to get people in. Anybody in this room that hasn't signed up yet should sign up. Well, as a plaintiff. Also, we need money. So anybody that can give a donation, you know, if everybody can give $20, I'm sure everybody can afford $20. Well, one time, $20. Well, if you can afford it, maybe a couple of times over the year, $20, that'd be nice too. But $20, and some people can afford more. Some people, you know, give $250 or $50 or $30, you know. So if you can afford more, give that $20. You know, I've had people give me $5. I really appreciate the $5. I, you know, in the Bible, the widow and the mite, and God said, that's the one, because she gave all, okay? You see, someone gives $5, that means they're having a tough time, and to giving that $5 is tough. I know I've been poor a few times. I've been homeless on one occasion with a family, pretty serious problem. And let me tell you, in those days, $5, $20, wow, wow. So I appreciate it. Mic's open. Anybody about anything?
Did you look into that grand jury idea we were talking about?
Well, sort of.
sort of?
I'm not sure. I understand. You see, a grand jury indicts, but an injured party is stronger than a grand jury.
I'm not so sure about that.
If a sovereign individual is injured, if you have an injured party speaking on their own, that's the most powerful. We're not going to get a grand jury.
Grand jury comes in usually when the state is looking to indict somebody for something.
Well, that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to indict these.
No, that's
what the state is looking for. No, otherwise, you have an affidavit from an injured party going after a another person or a sovereign.
Well, by the way, we do have over 40 grand juries indicting in this case, because if you take the number 1,000 and divide it by 25, that's the makeup of a grand jury. You come up with the number 40, and we're spread all over the case, all over the state. So we have 25 grand juries indicting right now. I mean, 40 grand juries indicting. And if we get 2,000 people, that number is a possibility. If we can get 2,000 people to sign on as plaintiffs, we're going to have 80 grand juries. And we're going to look at ourselves as that. You know, the Magna Carta was 25 free men. That's what makes up a grand jury. 25 free men got up, picked up the axe, grabbed the king by the back of the neck, and put a pen in his hand and said, sign it, and they held the axe to his head, and he signed it, okay? That's what the Magna Carta was, okay? Well, that's what we're doing. We're 1,000 free men and women.
All we have to do is get 25 people together, form a grand jury of...
We've already done that. We've got 1,000. We have 1,000 plaintiffs. It's done. We also, not only are we the grand jury, we're the judge. We're the tribunal.
Right. We're going to go on your affidavit. That's it, right?
Absolutely not. No, people are sending affidavits.
Whatever else anybody else can add to it, right?
Yeah, everybody goes out. They can download the affidavit. They should go out and download the affidavit and just sign it. If they want to change it and add to it and give a little bit of an experience, and look, my affidavit is going to say what that says, the one I wrote up. It's going to say exactly that, but I'm adding to it, okay? I filed for a gun permit over a year ago. The federal report came back to me in January, maybe February of last year, and I went down there, and they're working on it. Oh, yeah, we got all the paperwork, and everything's in order, and so on and so forth. That's a year ago. I have called maybe 5-6 times, okay? Never returned my call. I called again this morning. They were closed, but I left a message. You know, the sheriff was there, but put me over to the phone lines, and I left a message, please give me a call back, blah, blah, blah. I've called numerous times. No one's called me back. And we'll see if they call me tomorrow. And I may go down there tomorrow. But the point, I'm going to tell that part of the story.
Wait another 6 months. We'll let you know.
Yeah. If I get mugged and really beat up pretty bad, I'm going to sue them because I could have been armed.
That's right. Yeah, you probably make a whole lot of money behind that.
Oh, yeah. And if I die, you know, hopefully Gerard will push the case for my wife and get a couple million, you know? So, but anyway, we've got 40 grand juries. And we've got 40 axes ready to do some work. Mic's open. Anybody got anything? Questions, comments, any subject? As long as it's on the political process or the judicial process, whatever we're doing, the court case, so on and so forth. A purpose, anything? Gerard, you got anything, Carl? Someone must have something to share. And by the way, just a note.
Yeah,
you know.
Actually, I was trying to, I had it on mute, but I think... after you're done with the gun lawsuit, the idea I think Bill expressed, Thornton, was that you have 25 free men and they keep indicting. I don't know how they would keep indicting without an affidavit of injured party, but...
No, they don't. A grand jury doesn't necessarily need an injured party. They can do something for the good of the community, too. So, I mean, that's kind of rare, but they could. But if someone's murdered or something, you know, the grand jury comes out on behalf of the person who's dead.
No. They got a lot of work pre-made for them because they got to go after all these guys who signed on to this law that didn't pull their signature off. Now they got to be gone after and kicked out of government and maybe even put in jail, some of them.
Right. Well, I don't know how far we want to go on this. That is definitely a route we can take. It's something that we as a group, because we're going to be taking the committee man process over through this system here too. And when we become that, we have to decide what we want to do first. Obviously, we want to protect the state and the people in the state first and foremost. So we want to go deal with the sheriffs and straighten them out and straighten out all these legislators. And we also want to straighten out our representatives out in Washington. We've got the governor to talk to. We have county governments we have to deal with, town governments we have to deal with. So we as the committee men, I can see an easy 6 months to a year of really hardcore work. Now, everyone coming in is not going to have to put a lot of time into it, but you will find that one, two person in each county that will put that time in it. And they're the ones that will really make these things happen. And we will straighten up this state in 6 months to a year. And so that's kind of the game plan. And if we want to go, you know, hunting for these people, and I think a lot of them will deserve it. I don't know that all of them deserve it.
Let me tell you something. If anybody gets killed over this, every one of those people gets that murder hung on their head.
If
anybody gets killed, and they have to understand this, when you guys were in Albany last time, a group of people went inside to lobby the representatives, and there was a military guy there with, you know, all his ribbons and stuff on. They got into a discussion with him in the elevator about whether or not he would fire on American citizens or disarm them. And his thing was I have to obey orders. When I'm wearing this uniform, you know, the commander-in-chief is my boss and I have to do this. And they said, not if it's unconstitutional. And he said, oh, no. He didn't understand that he had an oath of office. And what they didn't tell him, and what I think would have weighed heavy on his mind, is what they should have said was, well, don't you know history's already flushed that out? Because the people in Nuremberg were soldiers that said we were just following orders. So if you think that you're going to just follow orders and have no consequences, you're seriously mistaken, because the ones in Nuremberg said they were following orders and they hung by the neck till they were dead. So go tell your buddies that when they're just following orders, when the people come back, if they don't kill all of us and take over, they're going to be held responsible.
Well, you know, one of the things we might be able to do, we're having a meeting tomorrow night in Greene County. Anybody that's on this part of the state that wants to come up to our meeting, they should. And so we'll get some people up there, and we're going to talk this over a little bit, because Chris had a great idea here. You know, if we can get the legislators to sign on, we need to get the list of legislators that voted against this thing. And we need to corner them and let them know that this lawsuit's coming up the pike and we're going after individuals and they have the opportunity to become plaintiffs instead of defendants, okay? And let's see where the rubber hits the road with these guys. Let's see how many of them will sign up. You know, we're going to have a sheriff out there. Let's see if we can get the sheriff to sign up on this. You know, we're going to have the Greene County Sheriff, right, Gerard?
Yep.
He's the only sheriff coming up, right?
Well, yeah, as far as I know, yeah.
Isn't the county... Is the county prosecutor coming up, or the county attorney?
I didn't get a call back. I was supposed to get a hold.
We're suing her, but nevertheless, she is still coming as a plaintiff with us on this one. Huh?
The county attorney, I wanted to get the DA. That's what I wanted.
Well, we're suing him, too.
Well, I want Terry Wilhelm because he's an elected official. She's a
but
county.
He's not a county, though. He's a isn't he the town prosecutor?
No. Terry Wilhelm is the county DA, district attorney.
Ah, yeah.
He's an elected official. He needs to be there Matter of fact, tomorrow I'll call him up and I'm going to extend an invitation. And that way there, if he's not there, I'll say, you know, we did extend an invitation. We didn't hear back from him or whatever. We will mention his name because he's one, you know, it's the sheriff, but it's also the DA. When you're talking about nullification, the DA is in the position to nullify, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, well, look at Holden. There's a stronger potential of nullification, and that's people nullification. We have the authority to nullify it. Look at, read this case that we wrote. It is so important to read the case and look at the power that you as a people have in this case. It is so clear you have the power to say, nope, ain't going to do it. Get arrested for anything unless there's an injured party. If there's an injured party, you got a problem. If you don't injure nobody and you go up before the judge, nope, ain't going to do it. You ain't got jurisdiction. And the moment that guy moves towards jurisdiction, you let him know with no uncertain terms that you intend on going after him civilly. You intend on going after him criminally because you're stepping outside of his authority. He doesn't have it. And whether you understand it or not is totally irrelevant to me. I just told you. You better go figure it out. And if the prosecutor is on his side and they're working together, well, you let them both know, then you're going for conspiracy and you're pulling up the U.S. codes, 42 and 18, and you're going to sue them both criminally and you're going to sue them criminally and civilly. And that if we all did that, we would shut the entire system down. People need to understand the power that they already have. The jury nullification, that already exists. I think it was Chris or somebody. I think it was Chris that brought up the point a couple of weeks ago in the New York Constitution, which is Article 1, Section 1. Let me think about this. Article 1, Section 8. No. Article 1, Section 1. I think subsection 8, and in which is part of the Bill of Rights, and it talks about the right of the jury for nullification. Okay, they have the power right there in the New York State Constitution, and we also have this in case law, nullification. So when that judge gets up there and tells these people that they got to rule according to the law the way he says it, go to hell, judge. That's not true. Now, you got to remember, you're working inside the Nisi Prius courts. That's why they get away with it. And that's why you can't afford to be tried in a Nisi Prius court. And a Nisi Prius court, the definition of a Nisi Prius court is a court that is created by statutes and operates and rules by statutes. They are not permitted to operate with the Constitution. So every Nisi Prius court is in violation against the people every time they get a sovereign individual in there. And who's the sovereign individual? It's the person who knows he's free. I decided to be a free man today. I'm sovereign right now. That's it. That's all you have to say. I'm free, and you are free. I'm a sovereign. You can't sue me. You can't prosecute me. I need to leave this courtroom now. Okay, I mean, I wish it would be that easy, but point is you do. We got the case written; works for every case. Just take the case; it's all in the paperwork, Your Honor, and then go to the next step, file a complaint. We'll write that case too. We're in the process anyway, and it's generic. It's all jurisdiction. It's the same thing. They get you for a gun violation; it's jurisdiction. Don't argue the case. Forget about the charge; it's irrelevant. It doesn't apply to you. Jurisdiction is what the point is. You don't have it. Okay. Littering, you don't have the jurisdiction. You shouldn't litter, though, by the way. So, speeding, speeding on a highway or safe places is fine, but don't do it on Main Street. You know, get out of here. You don't have the jurisdiction. Parking with a meter, don't dare tow my car, because you're really done if you take my car, because now that's a criminal action. You just robbed me. And I'm going to get my car back, and I'm going to put those people in jail. Okay, and then they'll never take my car again when I park at a meter without putting money in it. Yeah, it's a pain in the neck. Yeah, it's work. But I'd rather be fighting this fight than what's coming down the pike if we don't fight this fight. Because I hope everybody's got a lot of ammo.
Can't even get it anymore.
Yeah, I heard it pretty tough. So
I've been looking.
Anyway, Mike.
Right, a lot of dealers are just out of stock.
And we shouldn't stay too much on that subject, though, just to make that point. I probably shouldn't have said that. but you got anything, Georgie?
No, I'm just listening.
Anybody else got anything?
See what's going to go here.
Mic's open.
You know, I was thinking about this whole ammo business because, you know, once they do that, then the next thing is the food, you know?
Well, they've already got a control on that.
Well, yeah, they got
look,
control.
As soon as soon as the monetary system collapses,
right.
As soon as the monetary system collapses, and trust me, it's collapsing, as soon as that happens, we possibly could stop that in New York, by the way. There's only one chance to be able to stop that. And that's for us to succeed on what we're doing right here in the political process, taking the power in the political process, and, of course, in the judicial process, too. But mostly the political process at this point. We can cut that off by preparing the state as committeemen, first and foremost, by talking with our sheriffs, get that moving, and then, of course, getting real money back in New York State. We have a plan to get gold and silver, particularly silver, moving in New York State again. And it's a pretty it'll work, but we have to have the power to do it. And if we can do that before the collapse, we can prevent New York from collapsing, and other states can start the same. Then they might even be frightened to make the collapse because then it'll become obvious more. So, you know, we can do that. So, but when they collapse the economy, when not the economy, the monetary system, the dollar itself. When the monetary system collapses, okay, mark my words, within 30 days, they'll be piling debt up in the streets, okay? That's how bad it'll be because there will not be food. And anybody who hasn't prepared for it is going to be in trouble. And anybody who has prepared for it, you got to be ready to have enough to help your neighbor, even if it's just extra rice or flour or something, okay? So you can make bread or something, you know? You have to have something to help your neighbor. Otherwise, you have other problems.
Yeah, I remember Stuart saying that. That's where it's at, man.
I did
mm-hmm.
not.
Stuart Rhodes, on that
right.
video that he did with Alex Jones, yeah, he had mentioned that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Stuart Rhodes, Oath Keepers. He said that, what John just said, you know, that you got to prepare for yourself and for your neighbors because you got to work together. Otherwise, if you don't have and... your neighbor has, and you're desperate, you know, you're going to take what your neighbor's got. That's the way it'll go. If it's not organized, it's going
right.
to go there.
And you
got
to have a gun in those days. You better have
well, yeah.
a gun.
No,
it'd be better to be
someone
with
else
money rather than
like
fighting
it.
With each other, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Someone else is trying to talk. Who is that? Hello? All right, anyway, mic's open. Question.
John, it's Joe.
How you doing, Joe?
I was just curious, you know, with the weight on the appellate court with this, with the Board of Elections case.
Right.
How long do we wait until they're forced to do something?
Well, we're going up after them now. We've got a letter written for the writ of mandamus, which is the 2012 case. Okay, and we're putting the screws to them, and we're coming right out and putting the threat right in there. We're letting them know what we're going to do. And I was going to write it over the weekend, but I got busy. Today was a busy day, but tomorrow, hopefully, I'll have the time. I'll sit down, and we're going to do a paper on for a dishonor for them on that case. They have been, I think, 7 weeks now, which in my opinion is unheard of. It's a ridiculous amount of time. I was talking with Gerard about it earlier this evening, and the suspicion is that they're consulting, okay? They're consulting with the real lawmakers of the state. In case you didn't know, the real lawmakers of the state is the Court of Appeals, those judges. Whenever anything happens in the legislature where they come up with law, which, by the way, when they come up with law, they pay all these lawyers. We're paying for all these lawyers to make a prison for us. It's ridiculous. Okay, got to get rid of those lawyers first and foremost as soon as we get in. But anyway, the legislators should be writing the law because once they do it, they write the law, what they're looking to do. They then send it up to the Court of Appeals or they'll have a meeting with the Court of Appeals. And they will go through it, and they'll make sure the language works in harmony with whatever jurisdiction they're dealing with. And if they're dealing with an admiralty law, which is what they won't tell you this, but that's what town courts operate under. If they're dealing with admiralty law, they'll make sure all of that is consistent so that, you know, it works with everything else, with all the case law and everything else. If they are dealing with something which is rare that has to do with common law, they'll make sure that it's consistent and that nothing violates the common law side of the case. The problem is people cannot get into the common law side of the court. When I first started looking at this problem, everybody told me that there is no more common law in New York State or any place in the country, that we have to open up our own courthouses. And I mean, that's an impossible task. You know, that's not going to be done. But the closer and closer I looked and realized and found out, common law is still there. It's just that they don't know about it. You just exercise it, and you got to force yourself upon them. It's an uphill battle, but it is what it is. Either we're willing to fight this battle now, this way, put the time in, put the effort, put the time in to learn about it and do it, or we're going to be fighting it a different way, and it's a way that none of us, there's going to be a lot of lives lost. None of us want to go there, okay? So we have to do this, we have to do it now. So you go in, you exercise the common law side of the court. Why isn't it open anymore? Because they forgot about it. How is it they forgot about it? Well, the Bar Association snuffed it out. They over time have taught lawyers that statutes are law. Everywhere you look, they call it a law. You're a law-abiding citizen. They don't call it statute. They don't call it code. They call it law. And so now everybody thinks it's law. The judge went to the same school the lawyers went to. And so when you get up there and say, well, excuse me, Your Honor, you know, statutes are not law, and this is the common law court, and they look at it like you got six heads. It's an uphill fight. You've got to educate them, and you got to threaten them in a nice way. You do that in your paperwork to let it be known. Let them judicial notice, judicial cognizance. Take a look at this little code over here. See what it means. We accept all the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of this court. And you tie them into the footnotes, which is where you're telling them, I'm going to put you in jail. I'm going to take your house. I'm going to take your car. And I'm going after you with conspiracy if you work with the prosecutor or if you work with this one or you work with that one. Okay? And that's how you got to do it. And again, this is not, we've only been at this a short period of time, and look at how far we've come. Doesn't take rocket science. Anybody can do it. I assure you, if you take any high school student, which should be an eighth grade student, by the way, because high school isn't necessary if they're really teaching them. 8 years is more than enough, unless you want to become a doctor. I think we'll have to ban lawyers from the country or the state anyway. But anyway, we have to get lawyers out of government, that's for sure, like Jefferson and our founding father said. But anyway, you know, you take any child in an eighth grade, okay, which should be maybe around 15 or 16 at that point, because they should start later, okay? It's something we have to think about. We have to talk about these things but as when we have power. But you take any child in eighth grade, that whole year, and you give them a curriculum to focus in on common law. Now, they've gone through all of the, you know, political science courses and everything. They understand government. They understand the math and stuff. Well, you stick that course in on the eighth grade. And what the eighth grade course does is it trains them the procedures of the court, okay, and the fundamental principles of common law, which they would be learning all 8 years anyway, if they're looking into political science and into ethics. They already got all that, okay. It's all common sense at this point. It's maxims. It's founding father stuff. It's quotes from the founding fathers. It's the Declaration of Independence. It's the Constitution. It's the Magna Carta. They already got all that. Now you got them in the eighth grade. They're ready to come out. They're ready to go out into the world. And that whole year, if they get a 45-minute course or an hour, whatever it is in school, I think it's 45 minutes, 45-minute course every day for the year. By the time they get to the year, they'll be better than any lawyer in court. Any lawyer, I don't care, if they learn the procedures. Now they come in with their procedures. They already got their mindset, the court of record in view, the common law, which is natural law, which they've been learning for 8 years anyway. Hey, they can defend themselves. We don't need a lawyer. Now, if you could do that with a high school with an eighth grader, okay, why can't we? I know we paid our dues. We went to school. We did all. Well, look, you've got to find an hour a day. Find an hour a day. And in a year, you'll have it all figured out. We got it all up on our website. Go up and download the course. You know, we got all the tapes, you know, for the common law to give you all the principles. Go listen to the tapes, 50, 60 hours, whatever it is, okay? And everybody can do it. You know, I mean, you know, some people may not be as articulate as others, but you'll be able to run your case, and you get your spouse or your friend or your brother or your sister or your one of your children or your parents or someone to actually be the orator of the court. But you're the control because you'll understand it. You just may not be able to speak well, and someone else could do it. You know, we as a group, that's how we should be working. And that's how we work, you know, five or six of us, four of us, whatever, here and three or four or five over there. And everybody's working in their groups, and everybody has their little specialties or whatever. And some people can speak better than others. Some people can write better than others. Whoever does it, whatever, works together.
And as far as Thornton goes, he says you don't even need to speak. The biggest thing you need to do is go there and say, I object, because that's
right.
That's how you preserve your ability to appeal by objecting. But
don't forget, it's all in the paperwork.
It has to. Everything should be in your paperwork. That's
right.
Right.
You got to tell them.
And so that's what ultimately people are going to read. That's where the record is. That's what's being memorialized. It's more important than the paperwork. Listen, Jefferson, we talk about him today, but he couldn't speak. He was a horrible speaker. And look at what he wrote. He wrote eloquently.
Right. Anyway, mic's open. Anybody, questions, comments, statements, any corrections that could be made, anything we're doing here, and any new ideas, mic is open. Anyway, I want to encourage everybody to go get other people, liberty-minded people, and get them into what we're doing. Try to get them to our meetings here on Mondays evenings, and get them up to the rallies, or get them to sign as a plaintiff. Get them up to NewYorkCommittymen.org. Get them to educate themselves. Again, as Jefferson said, and I say this all the time, If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. You know, go out, join your gun associations locally, get involved with them, pass the word, get them involved with us, and by all means, sign up as a plaintiff on our case. Mic's open.
John, what's that note from Ed Klain of Chatton about something from Texas that would be of use to us?
I'm sorry, say this again.
There's a fella who just wrote in the chat, Ed Klain of Chatton, who said he has info from Texas that might be useful to us.
I'm looking. How do you spell the name? I'm looking out in the text chat to see Chatton?
E-D-C-L-A-N-O-F. Chattan.
All right. Someone called me today about some lawyer. I think they were out of the state of Washington that had some big wins in Chicago in gun laws, and to try to get that person involved with us and so on and so forth. But we don't want any lawyers. But anybody who wants to join, even if they're just joining for the first time and work with us, they're welcome. But we don't want any kings up on the mountain to come down and preach to those of us in the trenches to tell us what to do, and then go up there, back up onto the mountain again as they watch the little people do what they're doing. We don't want that. But if they want to roll up their sleeves, get down in the trench with us and work it out, and if they have something to offer us and some new ideas and thoughts, and we're all for that. But I'm looking for the name of the person out there. I don't see it. Maybe whoever wrote it can write it again so it's further up in the text chat.
It's Ed Klain of Chatton.
Okay. Yeah, I've
Ed
never heard of
Klain
that.
Klain of Chatton. He's got a blue things. Hi, folks. I have some good info from you for text from Texas.
Yeah.
You're going to have to type
okay. Okay. Yeah, I see it now. Yes. Okay, but what do they got? What's the news?
Texas.
Well, why don't he call into the chat, into the into the room, man?
Well, he's typing up. Maybe he doesn't. If he can, you can phone in.
Yeah, well.
Just the phone number is down on the bottom left. Dial in, enter the caller ID number, and if you don't have a PIN, just put number. What is it? Number one. If you don't have a PIN, right?
Well, listen, he must have a PIN.
One, and then pound.
Pound.
Yeah.
No, TalkShoe has allowed it even for you to come on here. I'll call in. Okay, good. He's calling in. TalkShoe has allowed it so that you can even come into the text chat as a guest without signing up. You don't have to. So that's pretty good because it allows everyone to participate and let them get used to it before they want to give information out or whatever, you know. Yeah, it's toll-free. Yes, number 9 asks, it's toll-free, yep. There's a number down there, the dial-in, 1-724-444. Well, that's coming in off of Skype. That is a toll, well, it doesn't look like a toll-free number, but I don't know. I presume it is. I call in off Skype, so... I can call anywhere. Most phones these days anyway, unless you're on a cell phone, most phones these days you can make almost any call anyway. They don't charge you. All right, while we're waiting for Ed to come in, anybody got anything?
Yeah, guest 9, it's free. Just dial in, call in. Just look in the bottom of the screen there and follow the instructions.
Anybody else got anything? Gerard, Carl?
Gene?
Oh, Gene doesn't have a mic today. Huh?
Good job.
Oh, fuck you.
You know, it seems like we have a good momentum going. I was concerned about keeping the momentum going, and it seems like the momentum has kept up in the past couple of weeks. Actually, he's gotten bigger. Certainly, the gun groups have really mobilized. You know, they finally realized that I think people realize that this is bad, really bad. And, you know, I think one of the reasons we're getting some of our officials to sign on is because they also feel the political pressure. And what we're seeing here to a greater or lesser degree is that syndrome that John talks about, how when we become the committee men and we take over the party, how those officials will do whatever we say because they want their jobs. And so, you know, they're always looking at the polls.
Yeah, but that's
You know, they goofed up with this one because they didn't think they were going to get such a pushback. But, you know, it's not just the polls. I mean, I don't care if everybody wants something. If it's unconstitutional, as an official, you can't go there. You know what I mean? If everybody wants to kill their firstborn child because they think it's a good idea, it's unconstitutional. You can't do it as a public official. Doesn't matter what the polls say, you know?
Right. Yeah, we're
but what we're seeing here is we're seeing the public officials come around to our side because they know that we have a political steamroller going here now. And I believe that, you know, we can identify this as our political pull, just like, you know, the committeeman is from the people. This is like a committeeman action right now, because, you know, ultimately, if we had good committeemen, they would be doing this. They would be bringing this to the officials. You know, when we call in our officials, like this meeting we're having tomorrow night, and the sheriff's going to be there, and hopefully the prosecutor and the county legislators, this is the kind of stuff that the committeemen should be doing. And I mean, we all should be committeemen. You know, I mean, a committeeman is a guy who comes from your precinct or from your voting district, however you want to say it. So he's a representative of, let's say, 10 blocks around your house if you're in the city, you know. And that's government of the people and by the people. It is the democracy inside our republic, because it is a part of a democratic process, obviously, because what you're doing is, that's the poll, that's the most accurate. Forget about Siena polls. Listen, I can create a poll and make it say whatever I want. I could go in an area where I know everybody has the opinion I want to come out, and I say, oh yeah, the polls say you're 73% up in the polls. The committeeman is the real poll. That's the poll that they should be listening to.
Right.
You know, they want to keep their jobs. And so,
well, usually they do, unless the public swells up. They usually listen to what the party tells them to do. But when people swell up, like the gun movement is happening, they may jump off that bandwagon, focus towards the people.
Well, that's because the parties are out of touch with the people.
Right.
You know what I mean? See, the people wouldn't have to swell up if the party was doing their job.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're all out here because they didn't do their job. That's why we're here. When I had to go fight with my town because they want to put zoning and Agenda 21, you know, the members were all upset. We've been working for 3 years, and nobody comes in and gives us any input, and now we're trying to implement this thing, and all you people come out of the woodwork screaming. I stood up. I said, yeah, because you're not doing your job now. I said, I don't want to be here. I got kids to raise. I got a business to run. You know, obviously I screwed up voting for you to represent me, because now I have to come and slap you. You're not doing your job. You know, when you don't see anybody here, that's a good indication that everything's pretty cool. You start seeing people coming to town board meetings and screaming and stuff, that's because things are not good.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me respond to M4LNY number one. They asked the question, how do you call on Skype? In order to use Skype to come on, which is really comfortable because you put a headset on, it's just a very comfortable setting. In order to do that, you have to have Skype calling. And I think it costs me something like $69 a year. It's very cheap. And you pay monthly, you know, a couple bucks a month. Or every 3 months, however they bill you. But it runs about $69-70 a year. And for that price, you get a phone number and you get access into the phone dialing within the United States. You can get it cheaper and just get the phone calling. And without a phone number. But that's the only way you'll be able to call in off of Skype. But if you use a phone or any other telephonic system, you just go down and the dial-in number is down on the bottom of the page here in the text area. The caller ID is down in the bottom of the text area. And if you signed up for a PIN, your PIN's down there. But if you don't have a PIN, I think they'll tell you on the phone call, if you don't have a PIN, put in 1 or 2 or whatever it is. I don't know. But anyway, that's it.
It's going well. Pound.
It's one? Okay, it's one.
One plus pound.
Yeah, they'll tell you one pound.
One
right.
And the pound key.
Gotcha. One plus the pound.
Yeah.
All right.
Call
me
on your phone. We could also, those of us who have paid Skype can also call somebody and suck them into the conversation that doesn't have
That's
Skype.
That's right. That's right.
You know.
Because you can have 2 or 3 people into your Skype, and they could be talking right through our system. You'll hear them.
This is a pretty versatile platform here. Actually, if they have Skype, you could pull like if that who was it there? Ed Clan of Chad. If he has Skype, and you put his name in, get him to
yeah,
be
you
a
can
contact.
Yeah, on Skype. Yeah.
You could suck him in on Skype. He doesn't even have to dial in.
Well, Ed's in right now. Maybe he can tell us what was on his mind in Texas.
Hey there. How are you guys?
Good, Ed. How you doing? My name's John.
Yeah. How are you doing, John?
Who's that out there?
That's Ed. Ed Klan of Chad.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Okay. I'm from Dallas, Texas. And I'm assuming you guys are all from New York, correct?
Most of us, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We do get people from other states, though, occasionally.
Yeah, I know. Well, it, you know, my position is that everybody from every state needs to join hands on this deal because
absolutely
it's attack on everybody, and so it's not, you know, we're not supposed to work in pockets, you know, by state because it's not going to work.
Right.
It has to be done across the
right.
Across
well, we have
map,
to first take
know?
Our state back, and then we have to work with the other states to help them take their states back. And when all the states take their states back, then we take Washington back. Well, at least when majority of us get the states back.
Well,
that's
the process.
Sort of our plan.
I have a program on Talk to You myself that I teach people the common law, and I teach them what the law says about how the country was established and all that stuff. And the way the country's operating right now, it's completely and 100% against the law, the real original lit law of the land. And so in order for it to return, the law of the land has to be reinvoked, and it has to be enforced again, which it hasn't been enforced probably since 150 years. Probably it's been that
right.
long since the common law or the original organic law has been used. But a lot of people think that the organic law has been done away with, but it has not. It has never been repealed, never been done away with, and so.
Well, they can never do away with
can't,
it. Because,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
They can't do away with it because they have to do away with the Constitution. It's based
and
on
have,
that.
And
right,
the Declaration
right.
of Independence, and,
that's right.
And they got to drop mm-hmm. God too. Got to get rid of him
yeah.
too. And they are working overtime to do that one.
Ed.
Yeah. They,
this is Georgie here. What's your ID number for your talk show?
It's 90.
9041
3.
Wait, 9041
3, as in
THREE. That's it. Okay.
Okay, what's that? That's your room number. You have a room here? You do episodes?
Yeah, on
okay,
on talk to.
What day do you usually do it on?
On Wednesday at 9 Eastern is when
Wednesday,
I do my program.
9 p.m. Eastern. Okay.
Yes, I learned a long time ago, John, that I used to listen to gurus all the time and try to go in and be free by using their process. But I learned two things. One, that a lot of the gurus, not all of them, but a lot of the gurus haven't done enough in-depth research in order
Absolutely.
To understand the problem. All right. Number two, the majority of them are not there to help you. They're there to divert you. And so they're provocateurs being paid to do so.
You know,
so
I suspect
so
that, too. Yes. I suspect that.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of those. There's a whole bunch of those out there. They're out there on Talk Show, too. There's several of them on Talk Show, and so.
Are you familiar
anyway,
with Bill Thornton?
Bill Thornton out in California. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 We have all. Have you? I don't know if you've been to our website. It's NewYorkCommittemen.org. CommittemenN. Committeemen.org.
Okay.
So if you get a chance to visit our site, and you'll see what we're doing. We focus in on the political process and the judicial process and trying to teach people how to get access
right.
to vote because that's where
right.
the power is.
Yep, that's right. But our main problem that we have right now as far as the judicial process is that the attorneys who created this phony baloney secondary system that was never intended by the framers to
yep.
be here, Their attorneys are okay. It's not the attorneys that's the problem. It's the membership they have with the American Bar Association because
right.
the American Bar Association is a foreign organization. And whenever the attorneys become members of that organization, they, in effect, expatriate themselves and they're no longer citizens of this country. They're actually a foreign agent.
Right.
And so they have created a system. That foreign system, they've created it, and they could not embrace the original law because they're foreign, see? So they actually weaned it out over a long period of time, starting somewhere around about 1871 is when the country actually became completely unlawful. Was in 1871. I won't say completely, but almost completely.
Is that when the Bar Association took over?
No, the Bar Association started in 1870. They were in
1878.
Yeah, they started in New York, as a matter of fact. I forgot
I thought it was the 1870s. Yeah. Yeah, I was just doing some notes on that, figure that out. What I was looking for, I haven't been able to find yet, is when did they first start licensing lawyers? Any idea on that?
What they did was with the attorneys, when they first started the ABA, it was voluntary. There wasn't anything mandatory for an attorney to be a member of that, because it was just a kind of a free association of attorneys that got together and was forming a group, kind of like a round table type thing. And you said that was
ADA?
Yeah, the ABA, the American Bar Association.
American Bar Association. Okay, I thought you said D. Okay.
Yeah.
The American Bar Association, as you said, I remember it was 1870-something. You say it started in 79. So are you saying
that... No, 78.
Okay. Are you saying that that's when licensing started, is sometime after that, or did it start before that?
Well, what happened was it went on for years.
Because I heard Lincoln was a licensed lawyer, and that would be at least five.
Well, I don't know. See, there wasn't any real licensed lawyers back then. There were lawyers, and Lincoln probably was a lawyer, and there was a whole lot of the framers that was a lawyer, but they were not, they were pre-association. They didn't have a group. They didn't belong to no groupie, or source association. And so the only group that they came from originally, I suppose, from England, was the Inns of Court, because the Inns of Court were the only one that was the king's group, similar to the ABA in America. And they are an extension. That American Bar Association is an extension of the Inns of Court in England. And so they didn't belong to any association. They were just free, freelancing. And so it's okay for them to do that, because you can hold their hands to the fire personally when they screw up. But when they become a member of a group like the American Bar Association or something, it's a little bit different, because the American Bar Association comes to bat for them, and it makes it real hard for you to get remedy whenever you need to get it from one of those attorneys, right?
Right. It's a problem. Let me ask you a couple of questions here. Another question I have here. I just started some research trying to make the case that for a common law lawyer, because you shouldn't have to be licensed to be able to help someone in court or even speak to them. And I'm trying to build a case. Has anyone done any homework on that? Is there any place you can refer me to so that I can kind of springboard off their work?
Well, it's something that they're hiding from us, John, and that is that there is a status of people in this country that were from the beginning, when the framers established the nation. They established those people who were the owners, the inheritors, and all of this land, and all the documents and everything that went with it in this land. They were the inheritors, and that was the posterity, the ones that they talked about in the preamble to the Constitution, where it said, "We do ordain and establish this Constitution for ourselves and our posterity." And it wasn't established for every single type of people in this world. It wasn't established.
Well, I do realize there'll always be the mentality of those who are subject and want someone to tell them what to do. And maybe in today's time, maybe with the proper education and the proper place of freedom, maybe everyone can step to the bat if we get the education system going in order to express that in the early ages to people to be free and to become a freeman. You know, you go back into the early days of England when the establishment of common law really started, 300-400 AD, and as things were established and moved on, you know, you had the Dukes and other different forms of groups, but they were the Freemen ultimately. Well, you actually had, I think people actually called themselves Freemen, and the Dukes themselves may have called themselves Freemen. I don't know. But there are different groups that knew that they were free and established themselves free, or noblemen, or whatever you want to call them. And how that was established, you know, that might have been through bloodline and being born in the right place. That is true. I don't know, and I got to imagine that people...
You could become a Freeman.
Yeah, well, that's my next point. My next point was
And you paid off your debt, and you became a Freeman, no?
Right. Well, that was my next point.
There was more to it than that.
Let me try to make a point to you, though, and then
yeah,
I'll let you speak on this. And so I think there were ways, as Gerard just said, that you can buy your freedom or move in. Now, I know that this was probably... at some point, you know, you got these elitists that kind of seized upon this and try to prevent everyone from coming in, like they do with everything. They want it. It belongs to them. They think they own the world. And so I see that problem everywhere you go. And we know that it was here in our country in the beginning, even when we were framing out the Constitution and framing out all the work that gave us the Bill of Rights and so on. And yes, but we the people... there may have been groups of people involved with the mentality that you're talking about, but I also got to believe that there were others. I mean, there was definitely, you know, George Washington was amongst them, obviously, Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson Madison and Adams, they were all there, and some of them were deceived a little more this way than that way. I know Adams and Jefferson eventually worked things out later in life. They become closer because they matured. They got some wisdom. And especially Adams started to eventually work it out. I think Jefferson was kind of blessed with the proper upbringing and an education that he was able to pick up on a lot of things a lot earlier in life. And so Adams kind of caught up with Jefferson. There's a lot of things I think on what was going on. But the bottom line is this. We the people do establish and ordain, and that's where we get our power. And even if the enemy doesn't understand it, we can exercise it, because that is the problem. Most of them don't understand it. The judges don't understand it or anything. We have to make them understand it. And once they come to finally open their minds and their eyes to see the pure logic of this positioning and the obviousness of this through looking at case law and looking even at the natural law and looking what the founding fathers had to say and maxims, and really all of a sudden have their awakening moment, whether they want it or not, they may get awakening moment. And then at that point, they have to deal with us. And that's kind of what Thornton has been doing. That's what we're doing. And I'm sure to some degree, that's what you're doing. But the key thing is this. Whatever they think they own, or whatever they think it is that they have, okay, nevertheless, the words are right, and it belongs to everybody. It belongs to the people. So with that in mind, is there anyone that you're aware of? Because I'm taking, this is my position I'm starting to build off of. Well, we can go into the Constitution, and we can see that we have the right to counsel. It doesn't say a lawyer or attorney. It's counsel. Anybody can be a counselor, okay? So we have a right to counsel. So right there is the beginning. And if we have a right to counsel, and just the fact that we're free, that's the first and foremost. Don't tell me what to do. You know, I'll take counsel from whoever I please. You know, it's none of your business. So that's a position that could be made. Also, the fact that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, well, particularly the Constitution concerning this point, was written before, obviously, 1871 and 1878. So before they had the Bar Association, before they had licensed attorneys or lawyers.
Right.
So all of this took place before. So what did you do then? That's where my case, I'm trying to build my point. Because I'm going to be running into this problem. I'm running into this problem with the case that I'm handling for my wife. The lawyer's telling me, oh, no, your wife's got to be here, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm getting ready to make my argument with him. I have a case that I'm doing for an elderly woman. A few of us, Gerard and myself, are working on this. And she's 75 years old, 76 years old. She's crippled. She just recently, I think she had a fall, right, Gerard? And she's in a nursing home right now. Hopefully she's going to get out soon. But we're working a case. They tried to rob this woman and take a home from her under in rem. And so it's under kind of the piracy rules. And so we kind of stepped in to protect her. And we had to sue. We ended up suing the judge that was supposed to give us an injunction. He broke the law, did some criminal activities with the county attorney. So we pulled him in and added him to the complaint. And so we're suing him. We're suing the county attorney, and a few other people in the town that took this house, this property away, or trying to take this property away from this woman.
So John,
but now I'm going to be going into court soon, and I know they're going to give me a hard time, and it's going to be an uphill battle to make my point that this woman has a right to choose anyone she wants, and obviously she's not going to get a lawyer to defend her against in rem and all your criminal activities. You're just going to get a lawyer that's going to go in the back room and work out a deal, and this poor woman you're going to just throw out into the streets, and I'm not going to sit here and watch it. So I got to make my argument, and I'm trying to gain or gather information. So with that, if you know of anything, that's kind of my question with all of that info. I know.
Hello?
I need some place to go to learn that others maybe I can springboard off of.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, how you doing, John? I'm showing up as Gene Art in a chat room. I just want to make a comment, kind of like a backup Ed's call. A good book that you could get, it's a great history book. It's called The History of the American Bar by Charles Warren. And you can get that through Beard Books online. That's Beard Books. Okay. It was written in 1911. You know, it goes back to the Inns of Court in England. It's chock full of court cases.
What was the name of the book?
A History of the American Bar by Charles Warren.
I got all that stuff. History of the American Bar. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, just if anybody wants to follow up on his comments, you could get this book. It's a great book. Even in the appendix, it lists all types of American law books that you from 1815 through 1910. You know, it's just chock full of information, and it's good stuff. You know, like I said, you know, it's. You know, we've got to learn from history. And this book is pretty good, you know.
Does it give us any assistance on how we can work with others to take back the common law court?
Well, wait, before you go there,
it's a summary. It's not a law book.
Okay.
But it's a history book. Okay, so yeah, don't be confused, you know, but just to back up, you know, to get some sense of what's going on and, you know, kind of like, you know, take people out of the conspiracy sites and get some good factual information on it so they don't kind of like, you know, wander into the doldrums, with all these wild conspiracy sites and stuff
Was that Bill from Texas? I'd like to hear his answer finally if he has one about.
You're talking about Ed from Texas.
Ed from Texas, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name. It's been so long ago.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ed, if you can pick up on that.
Yeah,
we put a lot out there on the plate, so you know.
I know you did, but I want to back up a little bit and explain that the people in England, the difference distinction between England and the United States is that all the people, as everybody probably really already knows, were considered subjects of the king.
Right.
And the king was the sovereign, and he was the only one who made claim to the land.
Right.
And whoever has sovereignty in the land is the ruler. That's
right.
The way it is.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he gave some sovereignty onto the freemen, too, though. I mean, that was the thing. He was supposed to, anyway.
Yeah, what he did was, is if they would do him a service of some type, like going into his military or whatever, you know, some service that the king needed done, if one of the people, one of his subjects, were to go in and do something for him and do a good job, well, then he would claim that they were a knight or a duke or whatever, a baron, and they would, according to their title, they would be able to get certain lands for life, or maybe if they did a good enough job, the king might allow them to inherit their family to inherit the land, you know, after they died. But in most cases, it was like lifetime.
Well, I'd like to inject something there. I think that would be presumptuous of the fact that over time that this has come to this point and it's become sort of political power with the king, I would guess. Because I know in the beginning, if you go back to 300 AD and you go to the Anglo-Saxons when they came into England, and they established the common law court or the natural law where they didn't have anything written down, and they believed looking at every case on its own and looking for the mind of God in it, you know, what is right and what is wrong.
Right.
And then when they hit up with the Bible, then they kind of brought together in the idea, of course, with the Mosaic Law and, of course, the Bible, which is nothing but one large maxim. So in that being the case, they then eventually established the king, which was really, you know, they were chosen from the people, the freemen, and that king was to do service to the freemen. Of course, that's why the Magna Carta came out, because the king got out of control and probably got involved with what you're just saying right now. He's starting to get people to pay off. He'll shake their hand, they'll shake his, and they'll work. It eventually gets more and more corrupt. And so that must have been going on. And then, of course, they got the Magna Carta, and they got him by the scruff of the neck and an axe in their hand and said, sign it. And so it's been a battle ever since, I'm sure. But he's supposed to represent all of the sovereigns, all of the freemen. But the American experiment did something a little different, and this is what a lot of people have got to realize, because this is so unique. Everybody's a king. We're kings without subjects. And so everybody's a king, and they get to decide for their own self and their own little realm what they want to live in. That's why legislators cannot legislate anything that's going to control our behavior. They can't tell us what to do. So with that in mind, that's the important point to this whole thing. They robbed it from us. I think I'd agree with you. And they've been playing in our history from the very beginning. But nevertheless, it's still there, and it's still ours, and we're going to take it.
Well, if you type in ends of court, okay, you could just Google them up or whatever. Just type in ends of court.
They're all over America. Yeah.
They're all over the place. Yeah. They're in every state, just about.
That's a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a bad thing. I heard an interviewer speak to somebody to this subject, and I don't know how far it goes, but, you know, he spoke to a lawyer in Florida. And what the lawyer told him, I don't know, you know, what kind of authority you're holding, but he basically said, the attorney said, you know, it's a good club to join if you're looking for a judgeship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that kind of ties in, you know, right. The attorneys and the judges into the aid. They're all members of the bar, you know, and it's their own, like, it's their own private law. And you're quite right saying that, you know, hey, I'm a sovereign, you know, and I want to write my own law. That's the common law, you know.
Right.
It's a good attack. You guys are doing a good job. I joined up at the Tea Party a few years ago when we spent lots of money, and you know, we eventually left because we felt that, you know, they were just, you know, going for the status quo. You know.
Yeah, they're sleeping, and you know, it's not their fault, because they've been brainwashed like all of us, and you know, you had an awakening, I had an awakening. Very few of us were born awake, so to speak, you know, born into a family that understood what was going on, and like my children. They know what's going on. They've known for a long time, and they're still reasonably young. And so because they've been around the truth. But they've been sleeping. They've been going to these government-controlled schools.
Absolutely.
And they've been brainwashed into the system, and they haven't got a clue. And it has been a major problem to shake the Tea Party people. And I know exactly what you say, because they're kind of half awake, but they haven't got it yet. And they're doing all these experiments, and they've got to the point where they're just repeating the same thing over and over again. Every year now, it's the same thing. They think they can elect people. They're going to save the nation, you know. And what do they say? The definition of his insanity is doing the same thing over and over again,
right?
Yeah, and expecting different results. So that's what they're doing. And some of them are waking up. I mean, we're getting our rankings to some degree from that area. But I think we may have a better chance, in my opinion, from my experience at this point. It's very little yet, but these gun people, because I went out and spoke to a group, an association, and I realized these people, they're really asleep, but they're into the sport. They're into the hunting. They're into teaching their children how to use guns and everything, but they haven't thought out the problems. They're not aware of the problems. They kind of know, like everyone kind of knows.
Right. There's an outdoor sporting goods store.
Right.
I'm going to go to tomorrow. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to it tomorrow. And I'm going to walk in and speak with the owner and mention your site and the suit. I'm just going to, you know, introduce them to that, you know, and talk to them a little bit and see, you know, if they want to get, I'm sure they will, you know.
Well, they jump real quick on it. But let me tell you quickly this little experience I had. I went and they invited me out to speak to them. So I went to speak, you know, 5 minutes. They gave me a lot more than that. And I told them my time. No, I'll keep speaking, you know. So, I mean, I must have talked 15, 20 minutes to these people in a couple of sessions. And but the thing is, I found them being very receptive. You see, they kind of know there's a problem, and they're being woken up right now because they're trying to take their guns away, okay? And they realize it. So they're being woken up, and they're making a move. So these are the people, but you're getting clean slates. They haven't come in realizing that there is a conspiracy and a degrading within our government, that we have some serious problems. They kind of, in the background, everybody knows that anyway. But they're coming into this to protect their guns. And now you have the opportunity to wake them up and take them into a direction immediately right into the right place, which is, how do we take our judicial process back? How do we take our political process back? And we have a plan for both of those.
Well, speaking of doing that, I tune into a program. It's called Aristuke Watchman. They're from the Aristuke Watchman. They're on talk show, A-R-I-S-T-O-O-K, Watchman. And over the weekend, they were dealing with the Agenda 21 issues up there big time. It seems that through Agenda 21, they want to take all that land and stop production on it, and just stop people from buying on it. You know, it's a lot of beautiful land up in Maine. And what happened? They set up members of this group. They set up a meeting with Governor LePage over the weekend, and he had them for a 1 hour time limit. And he told them out flat. He said, "If I don't like what you're saying, you know, you'll be out of here within the hour."
Mm-hmm.
But as a matter of fact, they were so well prepared in their statements and their research, they were there for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It
now,
turns out that he was not...
Of that. K-I-R-F-T, did you say?
No, Aristuke. A-R-I-S-T-O-O-K, Watchman.
A-R-I-S-T-O-O-K, Watchman.
Right, Aristuke, T-O-O-K. I posted it earlier in the chat before the show started.
Okay.
But they're also dealing with gun issues. It turns out that the governor didn't even know his staff was keeping the information that these people had wanted to get out to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it also turns out that they're dealing with the gun issues, too, because they had an issue up there where their local paper wanted to print all the names of the gun owners who had carry permits, okay? And, you know, they went out and they solved that problem, too. So there's a lot of good stuff going around on this,
right,
in the state.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, you might want to check that out. Maybe you might want to check out some of their strategies. But, you know, it's people are waking up. It's in fits and starts, but, you know, what people are doing more, better than voting is, like, you know, going to court. That's what I've been hearing.
Mm-hmm.
All the successes that people have had, they're going in pro se, they're claiming common law, you know, they're head on with the legislators, you know, that I think that's what you do. I think it's much, much better than voting.
Well,
you know?
We have to overwhelm the courts. Absolutely, I agree. And
okay.
Take over the political process, which, again, we do have a plan if you haven't.
I have. I've been sitting in the last few weeks with you guys.
Okay.
It's a very good idea. I'm going to send you a little donation myself as well.
Well, we appreciate that.
No problem, John. I'm a New Yorker. I live in Brooklyn. You know, I don't even own a gun. You know, I had an NRA membership and everything. You know, they're out of control. We all know that. Okay.
Right.
And with that, I'll just toss out, I'll back out of the call, and you guys continue.
Well, you brought in, it's interesting, you brought in this thing where they handed out the list of all the gun owners. You know, that put them into jeopardy now. You know, I know if they had my name in that list and they put it out and I was robbed or some problem came out right after that happened, I not only would seek out the individual, but I would seek out the state now, because then
well,
they're liable.
The people wanted to do it. No, they had wanted to do it, but they nipped it in the bud, the people.
Well,
that
ended up backfiring on them.
Right.
It did. Yeah, it did.
But,
mm-hmm.
But let me just make a point before Gerard gets to his point on the backfire.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I've tried for years to just go in and get the Republican Party rules, okay? For 2 years, I tried to get the Republican Party rules, and I never could get them. It was like top secret. And other information, you got to fill out all the papers. But it seems like someone walks into the place, asks for a list of all the gun owners, and the government just gives it to them.
Gives it to them, right. One other thing, too, I might want to mention. You know, when I was with the Tea Party, some people wanted to run for local office and stuff like that. It turns out that if you want to get backing okay, from the party, whether you're Democrat or Republican, you have to go to candidate schools. You know, and I'll call it brainwashing school. You know, they teach you how to answer and this and that. You know, so I mean, if both parties are sending you to candidate school, they're basically, you know, putting you in
bad.
The same frame of mind, aren't they?
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And then you have the judges going to judge school. We found out it's 9 days up here, and it's pretty intensive because they go from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 for nine days. They break it up into two periods of times, but one whole week, a 5-day period. And then I think a 4-day period, but or maybe it's a 7-day, then a 2-day, but something like that. But we were thinking of trying to get into this judge school. We got to find out if they have to pay, but I presume it's free. Find out what it is they're learning.
Right, exactly. Okay, well, look, I'm going to back off the call, and thank you guys for taking it, and, definitely send you a donation, man.
All right.
Thank you, John. I might be able to go to 28, too. That's in White Plains, right? That's posted on the committeeman site?
Well, it will be. Are you a member of the committeeman? Are you a member of our meetup?
No, I'm not. Like I said, I'm going to go on to the site. I wanted to sign on, you know, to the affidavit and, you know, just, maybe go up there and get in the courtroom and, you know, just be a body.
If you go up on newyorkcommittyman.org and up on the right side, I think it's up on the top, you'll see join. You don't have to join, but if you click on the join button, you go to a meetup site. And on that meetup site, if you look on the calendars, because I make sure that everything on that site is open for anyone to see. Mm-hmm. So you, even though you're not a member, that you can see in there. You go to the calendars and you look for the 24th, I think it is. Yeah, the 23rd. You'll see the information on the rally. I'll get that up there either tonight or tomorrow, and then you'll have the info. Or if you don't see it or you have a problem, just send me an email. You'll see my contact on New York Committeeman. Send me an email, and then I'll pop out to you whatever I have.
Okay, will do. Will do. And like I said, I'll be at the gun store tomorrow in my neighborhood, and I'll pass that on to them too.
That was a good experience. I went to the gun store. Did I tell you I went to the gun store?
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that was very good.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Good night. I'll be in chat. Take care now.
Okay. All right. Mic's open.
Well, we're starting to say that business with the printing the names backfired.
Right.
It backfired in a number of different ways. Number one, they got legislation to outlaw that. I don't know if they passed it, but it was written, and I'm assuming that they're going to put it in. And the other thing is they had some enterprising people that went and pulled the information of all those editors and the people that were involved and their kids and what kind of cars they drove and what the inside of their house looked as they went on Facebook and they got into their accounts, and they put their stuff all over the Internet. So I think that probably scared them. They said, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, that's what you want to do here. Let's put your name out there for everybody else to see, which is the other thing is you know, all these arms dealers are now refusing to sell to the government and law enforcement, which is kind of neat that they come up with that. You know, I mean, I think the law that they should sell, we should make sure that they sell to the law enforcement in the counties that said that they would nullify, where the sheriffs have actually stood up and said in public that they would nullify, so they should sell him ammo and nobody else. You know what I mean? You know, Ed. Mm-hmm. Ed, I don't know if Ed's back on here, but he never finished making his point about the common law. We kind of got off on a thing. I wanted to hear what he said. He said he went for dinner and he was going to come back and he wanted to speak.
What,
again.
Was that so, Gene? Maybe.
No, Ed Clan of Chat. Ed Clan of Chat.
That's who was just speaking.
No, that was not who was just speaking.
Oh, I thought it was.
I think his name is Ed Klanoff. Chat, you know.
Right, but I think, Ed, isn't that you that was just speaking? Who was speaking from down in Brooklyn, I think?
That's Jenard or something.
Jenard, that's right.
Right, okay, I'm sorry. Right.
Ed never got going with Jenard. Never did get to finish his
John,
point.
John, you got to mute your phone for now, okay? Let Ed speak.
Yeah, right. We had a mute button.
Yeah, you and Jenar got going, and Ed plan never got
That's
done.
That's right. So. Ed had that Texas accent.
Right. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Ed.
I think he's gone now.
Yeah, he went to get his dinner. What did he say? Be right back in a few. Got to get my dinner. I do want to speak again in a few. So I don't know. He must not be here. He'd be, okay. He'd be piping in. But I'd like to hear the end of his, what he was saying about. I mean, we got on to common law and the
Sixth Amendment. You know, I think we're all curious, John included, what cases are there out there about counsel and
well,
who can be that counsel?
Ryan found a whole bunch of them. Ryan found New York. He found Supreme Court rulings that says that they can't require you to be an attorney to defend somebody.
Well, we need those rulings.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to find them yet. I just started research and I got a couple of pieces of nuggets, but I haven't found any case law yet.
Well, he found a couple of good case laws that says that they can't hold you to an attorney.
Well, I need that real quick. Can I get him tomorrow night?
He's going to bring all his paperwork in. He's going to give
Is he going to bring those rulings too?
I'll get a hold of him and make sure he does.
Yeah, don't let him forget that because it's actually information.
He sent me, I don't know if it was on my cell phone or in the text chat. I might even have it. He gave me the ruling about this, one of the Supreme Court rulings on that. I'll have to look and see if I can find it. Maybe I'll even do it while we're talking.
I looked in New York State law, and I couldn't find really any law. I did find some law, but when you read through it very carefully, it doesn't say that you can't go in and represent someone. You can't go in and tell people you're a lawyer. And, God, I would never want to, you know, talk in my name by telling people I'm a lawyer.
It's a clan. It's a good old boys club. And the AMA started the same way. You know, the AMA was just a group of doctors that got together. And what made them strong is they were not curing anybody during the epidemics. They were still doing stupid stuff like bleeding people. Yeah. And the homeopaths were having good luck. And they got together and they said, what are we going to do against these homeopaths? Pretty soon nobody will go to us. So the AMA basically was started to discredit the other medical fields from what we like to call allopathic methods, in which they believe that everything is caused by a pathogen, which we know is not true. You know, I mean, again, they're like everything that's wrong is basically wrong on the same level. You know, even in our medical society, they treat the symptoms instead of the causes. Same thing politically. It's always, you know, they always make a problem and sell you the solution. They never
yeah,
fix it.
It's all about money.
Right. And so the doctors do the same thing. You know, this allopathic medicine that believe that everything is caused by a pathogen. Listen, these pathogens are out there all the time. Why doesn't everybody have them? Because it's not caused by them. When your immune system goes down, those pathogens are able to come in and proliferate. And then they look and they say, oh, well, you got streptococcus. Well, guess what? Streptococcus is out there all over the place. And I don't have it, but maybe you have it. It has to do with the soil that it grows in, and our bodies are that soil. Anyway, I don't want to get into a big medical discussion, but it's like this whole new world order thing. Is everything is ass backwards with the law, with health, with our food. I mean, it's...
Dentistry. Don't forget dentistry, too.
the mercury. I mean, it doesn't... Who could fit this stuff together to fit the way that it fits? You got to believe that there's an evil, diabolical force out there that's orchestrating this stuff, because I don't think a few men or a group of men could possibly put together such a plan that fits seamlessly. I mean, if everything that they're doing would work, we don't stand a chance. The only thing is they have to deal with their, like we were talking before, the powers that be are dumbing down, they're doing this, they're doing that. But you see, their system depends on cooperation. It's self-policing, and it only works as long as we cooperate with it. And that's where their weakness is. When people start to stop cooperating, their house of cards falls down. So they've built a self-policing system, but it is a house of cards. And if you kick the bottom card down, the whole system falls down on itself.
Well, this gun thing was a big mistake for them now, I'll tell you that, because I think that's it.
If you sat and looked at everything that they have, the technology, the this, the that, the education, the health field, the GMO grains, this, that, you'd like want to go do like the Eskimos did and put yourself out on a floating ice cube and go out in the ocean and die, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you really... A lot of what they're doing is psyops. Yeah, they got some wonderful technology. They got technology that we don't stand a chance to get. Listen, this whole predator drone thing is very scary because they can take people out from afar, and they take whole houses out. So, you know, so they don't care if we have guns. They just got their drones, and they go, well, with guns, you can break into an airfield and take the drones. I mean, we may end up
Having... this drone thing is really the biggest danger to us.
You don't even see the thing when it's shooting at you. It takes out three or four houses, everything. You know, they take out what they're doing in Pakistan and Afghanistan where there's a suspected leader or something. They take the whole compound out, men, women, children. They don't care. You know, and they're going to start doing it here. I think they've already started doing it here. We've had some explosions where houses blew up.
Yeah, I saw some on the YouTube.
Oh, it must have been a gas explosion. And, of course, the gas company right away runs down and says, no, it wasn't. We took our meters up there. It wasn't gas because they don't want to be liable. But they've never come up to a conclusion of what caused it. And believe me, I'm in the fire service. I've been a volunteer fireman for over 20 years. And let me tell you, your cause and origin teams, there ain't too many that they don't figure out, you know.
Right.
You know, the technology is there. I mean, even these planes that blow up stuff, they can sniff out, like the World Trade Center and stuff, they can sniff out these explosives. You know, thermite is something that you and I can't get. And only governments make. It's something that's very highly specialized. So when you go into a site and the meter goes off and says there's thermite present, well, you know that that was a major government cooperation with somebody. You know,
hey, did you see what Genoc put out there? The nano drones, hummingbird spy drones?
They got little tiny ones that look like mosquitoes.
This is frightening, you see, because this crazy president, we got to stop this stuff. But I tell you what, if the people think they're going to be able to stop it,
you have to make sure you got birdshot, not just buckshot, because birdshot's good for little nano mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got a bunch of them hovering, you take your shotgun and you put it on improved cylinder, boom, that's the end of that.
In order to stop them from doing this any further, you know, we have to take control of the political process. There's no other way to stop this, that part of it.
Stuff they're telling you about and all this other stuff, garbage, you know, they like to tell you that they have this stuff, but they have a limited amount. It never works completely perfect like they say it does.
Yeah, but those drones do, the bigger ones.
No, they don't. They Pakistanis hacked the GPS and landed the freaking thing in their own place. they got bullshit chips in them because they got people that were buying chips off of eBay, cleaning them up, scanning them off, and selling them to the government as $600 a piece chips. So because their whole system is full of corruption, the things that they see, this is the Tower of Babel that they're building. You know, you see. It's destined to fall in on itself because they created a situation that is steeps and breeds corruption, and they've corrupted their own system. They are not as good as you think they are. It's a bunch of bull crap. If it wasn't for the TV downloading this shit in our brains, we wouldn't even know they had it. And I mean, it's good to know that they have it, but I'm going to tell you something right now. They're not going to use those drones and those. What do you think it costs to make one of those nano mosquitoes? I know it gets cheaper and cheaper as time goes on, but for right now, you know, you got to be a pretty important guy for them to send this little tiny freaking mosquito in. I mean, that stuff has to cost a lot of money. That technology. I work on cars and I see their latest technology all the time, and the thing is you know how they work the bugs out. They sell them to people, and then the mechanics work the bugs out. So, I mean, they might have come out with this shit, and they've done prototypes, and they got some that work. But put them in the field and then find it. You know, the poor soldier that gets a bullet in the head because his nanotechnology didn't work, that's the guy you want to talk to, you know. Oh, what happened? Well, it jams when it gets next to power lines. Well, it doesn't like pine trees. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of shit that they haven't even thought of yet. You know, I mean, they were chasing this one special forces guy 10 years ago, and they couldn't catch him, and they were suspecting that he had help of the people. You know, he was fighting the government. I forget who it was. This was down south, and it took them 2 years. I don't even know if they ever caught him. I guess they did finally catch him. But he was, he had been in the service, and he knew what they did. And they were interviewer was going, "Oh, you guys are out here in the dark with all this night vision and that, and you got helicopters flying." They said, "How do you tell your guys from this guy? You're all out there all over the place. How do you know that you're not, that your helicopter heat seeker isn't following one of your own men?" And the guy said, "Oh, easy." Takes his hat off. He says, "We've got this little square of aluminum in our hat." And then he went, "Oop!" Because he gave it away. And what do they think? This guy walked. He probably put one of them little squares in, so he thought it was one of their guys, and walked right out in between them.
So we got to get a little square piece. So these people with these aluminum hats, they're not so crazy after all, huh?
And foil hat. You know, they have this technology that's supposed to burn the skin. Microwave mm-hmm. technology. And it heats your skin up. Listen, I know you're not supposed to put metal in a microwave. The new ones you can, but guess what? Microwaves doesn't take a whole bunch of metal. You take an aluminum space blanket and wrap it around yourself. I'll bet you that thing doesn't work. You know, they had these riot shields that if they had a button on them, and when they pushed them against the crowd, it would tase the crowd. Well, the crowd figured out that if they throw water on the shield, the guy operating the shield gets the shot. So they had a bunch of water there when they were using these shields, and they were shocking the cops.
Yeah.
They didn't figure it out. Yeah. They're shooting them with water pistols. Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Let's see if Ed's back. Ed, are you back yet?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. You wanted to finish off with what you had? I got a recording going, and I want to shut it off, but I'd like to get what you have to say onto that recording before we shut down.
Never got to finish your point there when we were talking about common law and where it came from and stuff. You kind of got stepped on.
Right.
There.
Well, the problem is, all right, it's the key thing that they hide, like I said before, that we have to embrace. And the only way to the other side, going back to home, I call it going back home. The only way back home is one small path, and it has to do with the original folks who, you know, the posterity, not obviously the framers are all dead, but the posterity of the framers are the ones who have the inheritance in the soil, and they are the ones who can make the difference, and they're the only ones who can make the difference because they're at law. The other people are not at law. In 1868, I guess it was 1867 actually, when the 13th Amendment was passed, and then in 1868 when the 14th Amendment was passed, it created a congressional citizen who is not under law, and they have no authority whatsoever in this system. The only people who do are the posterity of the framers. And so they're the ones, they're the only ones that have the authority to do anything. And
yeah,
so,
but we could be their posterity without having to be a direct bloodline to us.
No, no, no. It's not
let him
no.
finish, because I think I know where he's going here.
No, there's two definitions to posterity. One is direct lineage, and the other one is of the same stock or race of people. And since this country was created by Anglo-Saxon law, you know, no other people in the whole world follow the common law. They all follow a different law, and most of the time is dictatorship, which is really no law, or monarchy, which is the law of the king, which is man's law, all right? So there's not many people in the world. There's only one group, and that was the Anglo-Saxons. And all of our law came from the Anglo-Saxon. You mentioned it a while ago. So when the framers spoke of their posterity, that's how they were speaking of them. And we know that because if you go to the Naturalization Acts, it speaks of the fact that there's only one group of people that can become a citizen of this country. And so... It doesn't speak of the natural born because it didn't have to. The law didn't speak of that because they assume on that that you are one of the posterity if you're born on the soil. But an alien coming from another country, Germany, Australia, England, wherever, you know, coming to this country, the law deals with them only specifically because they're an alien, and because they were born in a different country, they have an allegiance to that country. So the law, the Naturalization Act, which Congress was given the power to operate in the Constitution, or to actually, it says, create a uniform act of naturalization, and they did. And once it was created, that's it, folks. It can't be changed. That's the end of it. Because, and the reason why I know that is because it formed the nation. Because if you look up the word nation, it's the people. That's what a nation is. It's not the dirt or the grass or the land. It's not any of that, or the air. It's the people. And so when it was formed, the first Naturalization Act, and it was actually done in 1790, it formed the nation.
And yeah, but now, let me ask you, I don't understand that. What you're saying is that there's a certain bloodline of people?
Yes. No, a certain race. Not bloodline, but a race of people, and that was the Anglo-Saxon.
Okay, but so you're saying that unless you're part of that race through that and their posterity, that you can't make the claims of the people?
No. That's not what he's saying.
No, what I'm saying is that, all right, the original folks got, you know, when I say organic, I mean the Anglo-Saxon folks when they came here. They created for themselves the tradition, their tradition that they had held all the way, like you said, back to Magna Carta and even before that. Their tradition of the common law, they brought with them to this country. And anybody else that came to the country, at that time anyway, had no protection. They had nothing. They were just here. You know, they were visitors, and we could decide whether we want to leave them here or not, you know, at that time. And they did. You know, they made the black a slave and put the Indians on a reservation and all that stuff. But anyhow, and that's a long story about that part of it, but just trust me, the way they did it according to the law of nations was correct, the way it should be, and according to the Bible also it goes along with all that. But anyhow, when they set that up, then when they said, we do ordain and establish this Constitution for ourselves and our posterity, it did not, nobody else, no other peoples of the world got any rights or protection, actually, from that Constitution. It was only the people that established it and their posterity. That was it. And so...
Okay. Now, Gerard, do you understand what he's saying?
Yeah. Let him go. Okay. He's not done. He's going to make the point here.
Yeah. Okay. And so whenever, you know, once the nation was created, right, in 1790, you know, the Constitution was in 1789, and then you had the Naturalization Act of 1790, which was 1 year after Congress, a lawful Congress was sitting, and I say that because I underline that lawful Congress because we don't have one today.
Right.
But they actually, Thomas Jefferson was the one who penned the Naturalization Act of 1790. So he was in Congress, and so that was original intent. I don't know how much more original intent you could be than one of the framers putting together a law or an act. All right, and so. So that was the law, period. And Congress could not change it. Once it's set, you can't change it. And the reason why you can't is because if you were to change it, you would disband the nation. You would destroy the nation. It would be no longer
America. Right, so what you're saying is through the Naturalization Act, that's what born the melting pot.
That is what formed the nation. That's it. It was
right.
The Naturalization
right.
Act, not the Constitution.
Now those people who were not of that prosperity were bequeathed those rights. And there's also another thing with being born on the soil. We discussed this earlier in our journey, was the fact that if you were born in the original 13 states, because some of the stuff that went on with the western states out west, didn't follow those laws as far as bringing them to statehood and coming in and taking them over with the manifest destiny. The 13 original colonies had more, you know, I was born in North Carolina, and so therefore, mm-hmm. as a free man, I actually have more clout than, let's say, somebody who came from the Louisiana Purchase, let's say.
But
right?
I'd like to comment on that. Here's the thing, is that it appears to me that being said is that there's a selection of people.
Once they form the Naturalization Act...
Right, well, that's a whole different story.
That put
but
that
you
whole
can come,
thing to bed. In other
I
words,
understand
it wasn't
that,
just the Anglo-Saxons.
But you can shut that off. In other words, you can come out of that. Here's the key thing, in my opinion. And
come out of what? The Naturalization Act?
Naturalization... Didn't that come from the 14th Amendment?
No.
Okay, because
no,
the
was
14th
original.
Amendment created
we
have, the...
Listen, what he's saying is the original Anglo-Saxon people here formed this union and for them and their posterity. That didn't include somebody from Italy that was here at the time, okay? It was
no.
The Anglo-Saxons that formed it for themselves and their posterity. So therefore, if you came from Ireland and you were here, and you weren't part of the Anglo-Saxon race, let's say, although maybe Ireland's not.
Well,
a good
Irish one. Is. Irish is, though. They're Anglo-Saxon.
Right.
Well
that's,
I don't really like what I'm hearing, and let me tell you why. And maybe I'm misunderstanding what I'm hearing, but I don't like what I'm hearing. Here's the problem. I'm created in the image of God just like anyone else, and no matter where you come from, first of all. Second of all, the Anglo-Saxons, when they came to England, they mixed with other groups of people. There's the Normans and others that were made up of England. And they met with the Bible, so you got a Hebrew connection there, too. So there's a kind of a whole mixture of things. And they grabbed very quickly onto the Bible. And there is no, you know, I don't know if we're talking a bloodline or a certain group of people or what, but the bottom line mm-hmm. is this, no matter where I've come from, no matter where I was born, And I do understand the soil part. We did look a little bit into that. But the bottom line, in my opinion, gets back to this. No matter what part of the planet I am born on, no matter what race or bloodline I come under, it's totally irrelevant to me. Once I become conscious of the fact that I owe to God, and I'm created in His image, which is where we really got to focus in on, now I've received my rights under God. Now, it could be true that a particular group of people, I look to my heritage, where I come from originally, as far as my bloodline goes to, you know, I go back into Germany and I go back to Czechoslovakia, because that's where my parents come from. But my mother was born in this country, my father was born in this country, their parents were not, I was born in this country, they were born in New York, I was born in New York, and so I'm kind of on the soil, but irrelevant to the point. The point is this. I could be from Germany direct coming here and become one of the people in the state of New York and claim the rights of that God has given me, the God-given rights, claim the words in the Bible, in the Declaration of Independence, claim the words in the Constitution, we the people, and say, well, I claim those very same words for me because that's for me, too. I'm the king. I get to write my own law. So anybody can join in on this thing.
No, you're not understanding what he's saying.
Everybody he just got through mentioning is Anglo-Saxon.
Let me come from Africa or from the Middle East. In the Bible, listen, first of all, a sovereign and a king is recognized by God. When the people were in the desert, and they said, give me a king. They were under God and directly. And they said, give us a king. And he says, you don't want a king. And they said, yes, we want a king. And he says, well, a king's going to constrict you. He's going to do all these things. They said, we don't care. We want a king. He gave a king. Now, what a king has the ability to do, he has the ability to say, you're a slave and you're free. So that's the power of a king. And it even says in the Bible, if you're a slave, be a good slave. The only reason that anything's different in America and that you can claim anything different is because our forefathers who came here and did this for their people and their prosperity then set down a naturalization because they could say, listen, you're not part of this. And they could do it legally, John. They're here. They're kings here. They were kings. And they don't have to let you in. Now, you're in because he said your parents were part of that Anglo-Saxon prosperity. But the people that weren't, They formed the Naturalization Act and gave it to them. You can't take it back.
Yeah, they excluded them. They excluded everyone else by Naturalization Act. I've got. Let me see.
But
what,
anything
what
that's repugnant,
says.
Anything that's repugnant to the truth is null and void.
Yeah.
If that's repugnant,
right.
You can't tell a black man, you can't tell anyone from an Arabian country, you know, from an Arab, you can't tell a black man, you can't tell a Central American individual that they can't have their heritage, which comes directly from God.
If they were born on this land, John, if they were born here in the original 13 colonies, then they're natural born, and it doesn't matter what their race is.
Well, who's,
right?
Well, is Matt who's going to tell
that? Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what he's saying. Let him finish.
Okay.
Hear what he has to say here. All right.
Okay.
You had to be Anglo-Saxon. Period. That's the end of it, because that's what the law said. And a matter of fact, let me give you a history lesson on the Naturalization Act themselves. The 1790 Act was there's two parts to the Act, and one part is who can be. And the other part is how they can become a citizen, right? And so the first part says the who, and what it says is basically, I won't pull it out, but basically it says any alien who, being a free white person, may become a citizen of the United States or any of them if they do the following things and not otherwise. That's basically what it says, all right, for the who. The how was... the problem in 1790, they only gave them 2 years to become a citizen. And remember, they were riding coaches and riding horses and that kind of thing. And so it was hard for them to get back and forth within 2 years when they came over here, you know, aliens came here to become a citizen. So under the law. So they screamed and hollered at Congress and said, look, you're going to have to give us more time. You know, we can't get back and forth to the courts and get this done within 2 years. And then if we don't, you're going to deport us, see? So Congress said again in 1795, and they repealed the entirety of the 1790 Act, and it says so right up at the top right, if you'll look at it. They repealed it, and then they reenacted the Naturalization Act of 1795, and they put at the top again the same wording as was in the 1790. Any alien who, being a free white person, can be a citizen of the United States if he does the following things, so on and so forth. And they changed it and gave him 5 years instead of two.
Right.
All right.
Let me ask you, before we go any further, hold on a minute. Let me ask you a question. Are you saying that there are certain groups that are excluded?
They're excluded
certain
from the law.
What I'm saying
is, lawfully speaking, John, lawfully speaking now, I'm talking about
the statute.
Original organic law. Law of the land.
That was produced by statute.
There are citizens under the law of the land, and there are citizens that are fictions under the law of the land.
I understand, but that's a state of mind and a state of being. It's not a state
It's a state of law. Let me just say
one thing here, and it's very important. Right. I'm going to interrupt under this conversation
right.
at this point to make sure we understand what we're saying and make a couple of points. First of all, the Anglo-Saxons that came into England back in 300-400 AD, those individuals had nothing in writing. They didn't want anything in writing because they felt that there could be no legislation, no idea put onto a piece of paper that people would have to be held to. They were seeking out justice, true justice, and they were seeking out the mind of God ultimately. And in that process, they were looking for justice. Now, when they met the Bible, which another group of people were now looking at Hebrews, Jews, and Christians, and people from all over the place, because God accepts all people into Christianity. But when they met the Bible, okay, that's when it dawned on them where justice comes from. You know, justice ultimately, to put it crudely and straightly and biblically, it comes from the hem of Christ. It comes directly out from him. And that's where justice comes from. And he comes to all men. So with that point being said, they didn't want nothing in writing. They accepted the Bible as a maxim. They accepted the Bible as the word of God. So therefore, anything that came out of the Bible, they accepted it. That's where they got to at that point when they started to develop the process that they did in England. Now, the first written document, which again, you know, this is the Magna Carta, the very first written document. But it doesn't have to be so for you. If you decree that, I don't need that, I got something else. That's okay for you. Again, you're created in the image of God. As far as I'm concerned, any person standing on any place in this planet can declare themselves sovereign just because they're born from God, and not from, well, of course, they're born from men, but they're born in the image of God. They're created in the image of God. Therefore, they claim their freedoms and their rights directly from God, no matter who they are, whatever time period, whatever place, geographically speaking, whatever bloodline, whatever race, anything, it's irrelevant. So you have a group of people here that may have established something, but everybody's welcome. If they're not welcome, then that's unjust. That's not right, and it's unjust. So, and they can't create a law that stands on a piece of paper legislated by men, calling it acts or whatever you want to do. That doesn't hold, okay? Because if it's repugnant to righteousness, it's repugnant, and it doesn't hold anywhere. So to the point that I'm nervous about this conversation is it sounds like that there are certain groups that are excluded in this country or anyplace else in the world. I don't know if anybody anywhere in the world, they come to America and they get in here the right way, which are the rules that we have set up, you know, whatever those rules may be. But once they get in here, they're welcomed into, they got whatever we got. I'm one of the people.
When they wrote all men are created equal, they knew exactly what kind of can of worms they were opening up there. When they said that was the Declaration of Independence, right?
When they said
all men are created equal,
they knew
that they were talking the end of slavery. But that didn't free the slaves now, did it?
No,
that came later. They knew that was a problem.
What he's talking about has to do with that process.
Can I interject here for a second? I want to go. Gerard is speaking about, and my understanding of the 14th Amendment, okay, actually the 13th Amendment freed the slaves in the country, right? Okay, that was the one that stated, you know, the slaves during the Civil War, okay? So they created the 13th Amendment. But the 13th Amendment didn't give the blacks, the slaves, status.
No.
And what happened was they passed the 14th Amendment, okay, which gave them status, right? And then they had realized, and this is the way I'm understanding it, I might be mistaken, and I'm just asking you guys to clear this up for me, is that they turned around under the equal protection clauses in the Constitution, and they gave everybody the same status as the slave, as the freed Negroes.
Is that
what happened?
I think you're on a point that they did that through deception, though. You see, the 14th Amendment was a trap.
Yes, it was, yeah.
The only thing the 14th Amendment did is remove the ownership of the slaves from the free white men in the South and gave it to the federal government, which, you know, it's very well, partly down in the South anyway, but, you know, mm-hmm. gave it to the federal government. But the bottom line was that eventually people signed on because they were dumbed down eventually through education, through the change of history.
The carrot on the stick was the privileges that they offered.
Right. The problem is once you become a 14th Amendment and believe yourself as a 14th Amendment citizen, a citizen of the United States, and not one of the people of New York, once you believe yourself to be a citizen of the United States, you're now subject to the laws thereof. Now you go into Admiralty Court, you can't challenge jurisdiction because you are underneath them.
And the case, I read the case Texas versus White, where they established that a person is a citizen of the state he lives in, and of a citizen of the United States, because there was a secession issue, and it kind of tied that right back into the 14th Amendment, did it
citizen,
not?
But that citizen of the United States was not a 14th Amendment citizen. The point is this, is that you can, okay, you could be in New York today, and mm-hmm. tomorrow morning, get up in the morning, pack up your bags, move over to Pennsylvania. The moment you cross your lines, your state of mind is a Pennsylvanian. Now you're a citizen of Pennsylvania. Being a citizen of the states or the United States, meaning that you can go into any state, but not the 14th Amendment. And that's why you got to really be careful, because these bastards played this fraud game with words. you know, like
president.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I'm very careful. I don't even call myself a citizen of New York for fear I may fall under that plan.
Who said it when they framed the Constitution? Somebody said, "I'm no longer a Virginian." Was it Patrick Henry?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I forget which one of them, but they said, "I'm no longer a Virginian." They knew back then what it could lead to.
The 14th Amendment came a lot later. What was it? Because we were united, and that was the key thing. We became a common people, and the moving between the countries, we became a nation, and we could move between the countries freely, and you can settle in any country and become whatever country you settle in, whether it's the country of New Jersey or the country of New York or Connecticut or Pennsylvania or Texas. Okay,
so you had the same rights.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's why we have the U.S. Constitution. That's the rights that rule. That's the law of the land that rules all constitution. Any constitution in any state that is repugnant to the any point of the Constitution that's repugnant to the U.S. Constitution is null and void.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big plan of the whole thing. So, but to be a U.S. citizen, I don't know that you could possibly be a U.S. citizen in logic, because a nation doesn't have citizens. A nation
is a group of people.
But they've made us citizens of a corporation, and they've made us citizens through the 14th Amendment, and that's where they get their fraud. And ultimately, you're not living in your state. You're living in the District of Columbia.
When
they look at the flag and they see the 50 stars, they look at the blue around the 50 stars and say, that's the District of Columbia. So the stars are the states set within the District of Columbia, which is their fraud. It's a fiction, okay? And that's how they, and then they call you a resident, so you're not really living in the state. You're really from someplace else because you're a resident, and a resident means you're moving on.
I want to say something. Even in the Bible, God understands people not having full rights. He understood slave women and free women. There's a certain piety that a man has to his nation when he goes off and he's bound, duty-bound to fight a war. In other words, because you live under a certain nation, you have a certain duty to that nation under piety. And that's, the Bible doesn't say that we're all kings. Matter of fact, whether we were or we weren't, when they asked for a king, they became subjects of that king, and God recognized that they were subjects under the king, and God didn't talk to the people anymore. You know who he talked to? He talked to the king, because he was the representative of the people.
The problem was,
that's what they're saying,
Right. I don't think Ed ever finished his point about in prosperity, because it's a very organic, legal. I know where you're going. I had stopped it
because I want to be very careful. We don't go into a place where we don't want to be.
At least not
this
group. I know what you're talking about.
So I want to be very careful with that. I'll let him finish the point, but I want to be right up front. Okay.
No.
I know I'm robbing the mic at this moment, and I apologize for that. But I feel
a great conversation.
I feel that I have to. That's all.
God accepted slavery under those conditions.
Right, but you got to understand another point when you read the Bible.
You don't have a right to rebel. If you're a slave and he's beating you and this and that, you don't have a right to murder to get out of that.
You're absolutely right. Paul spoke of himself as a slave to God.
Right,
okay?
Right.
But
so
the bottom line is that we're all slaves to the prince and power of the air, which is Satan here in this world. But he had established a place where people can be free. And that originally was in the nation of Israel after their 40 years and they came into the promised land. Of course, that ran into problems.
But that was only for the Jews.
Absolutely. And here we are in America.
But what happened? The Jews didn't accept him, so he went to the Gentiles.
Right. But we have the same opportunity here in America. But I will tell you that even in America, at least at this point in time, there'll always be subjects. That's what they want to be. But anybody can step at any time, have an awakening, and say, wait a second, I'm one of the people. I'm the king. It's good to be king. Anybody. But unfortunately, there will always be subjects, at least at the mentality that we're running at now. Is there a possible change for that? Probably not. It'll always be here because, again, the prince and the power of the air still has control of this world. And until Christ comes and does whatever he does with this world, it's going to continue that way. So there'll always be slaves, and God speaks to the slaves, and he speaks to the freemen, and he speaks to anybody whose ears he
opens. One of the reasons the churches have so much trouble with America is because we don't have a king. And the church, like Rome, is used to dealing with a king that speaks to everybody. And the trouble with America is,
we got Obama. What are you talking about?
Well, you got to look at anybody ever read the secret treaty of, oh my God, I forget the treaty, but the Vatican gets together with the monarchies and they write a treaty that establishes that there shall be no republics. And
because that was always the battle, and that's why this nation was formed. It was to get it away from the churches and the bankers.
It's on Yale Law, Avalon Project. I forget the name of the treaty. I'll remember it during the conversation. Sorry, go ahead.
And of course, the bankers were in here with their fingers because they wanted to get rid of the church. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The church was a powerful force. And so the American experiment was helped by some of these bankers who backed off and gave people more rights to wrest away the rights from the church that the church had over people. And so once the nation was formed, then what happened? Then they came back in and they worked on putting their central bank in to take back our freedoms again. They just used this experiment to break the people away, to break themselves away from the church and the monarchs.
Let me see if we can find a certain place of agreement here. And I agree that there are slaves. There'll always be slaves. Certain mentalities or certain groups of people, maybe even to some degree, large groups of certain bloodlines or races, are more apt to be into that kind of condition than others for whatever reason. Well, mostly because of the Anglo-Saxon process by which it came out, and also ultimately it all arises from the Bible that was blessed. The works of the Anglo-Saxons was blessed because it was destiny for them to come into connection with the Bible. But here's the thing. See if we could find agreement. Would everyone agree on this? That whether they're slaves or not, and bloodlines or whatever, totally irrelevant. But anyone from any point of life, from any geographical place, can come step in this country, become one of us, and claim kingship and be as free as anyone else. Would anyone deny that?
No, anybody can come in and become and claim the common law. Is that what you're saying?
Right, become a king. Say, I'm a people too. I'm created under the image and likeness of God, and I claim that the founding fathers of this country are my founding fathers only. Maybe I wasn't born here, but they're my founding fathers, and I'm free. Okay, so would anyone argue with that?
I would not
under the law, it was only the Anglo-Saxon that had that right that you're
I
talking
understand
about under
that,
law.
But the Declaration of Independence, if you want to look for a written piece of law, the Declaration
right.
of Independence writes it all men. So that comes before other law after. So that trumps it out when a person says,
right.
I'm one of those all men. I'm coming above that law, that whatever. I'm one of the people. Whether they understand what they're doing or not, whether they understand the legal points that gets them to that, is irrelevant because simplicity is the key to freedom. I'm a people. I'm born in the image and likeness of God. I'm the king, and I will decide what the law is for me. I don't hurt you. You don't hurt me. We're all happy campers.
Well, we still
so would that,
we
would
still,
anyone argue
we,
with that?
We still naturalize people. We don't just let anybody on our shores. They have to go
whatever
through a
the case may be. Whatever the exercise
well,
is.
Well, listen. We
let's
we,
take
we,
Manny.
We people.
Manny Let's take Manny. Manny went through the whole process. He's in this country well established for a long time. He's an educated individual, but he comes from another country. Can Manny claim? And let's give Manny a different race than what he is. Okay, so whatever that race is that has the biggest problems, that's what Manny is. Let's just say for the argument's sake, he steps up, comes to a point of consciousness, and says, "I'm one of the people. I'm free. I'm a king, and you don't have jurisdiction over me." Can Manny do that?
He can do that, but if he wants to be protected under the law, he has to do those things that naturalizes him.
I don't have a problem.
What do you say?
I don't have a problem with that.
What's that?
If he has to do that, I don't have a problem with that.
Right, because you can't just leave the shores over anybody who says, I'm a king, I'm coming here, I got all
right,
the rights you got.
I appreciate that.
Next
no, but
thing you
my
know, they'll
point
be kicking
is,
out of your house.
My point is that anyone can be transformed into this kingdom as one of the kings of the
ministry. That was John. That
Are
was
we
the
agreeing
experiment.
On that?
That's right. That was the great experiment.
Okay. As
that
long as we agree on that, then, you know, I can see how certain realizations and acts have certain problems and so on and so forth. But the point of the matter is this. We here together in this room that are working to try to save this republic, and others that are doing it and we don't know about. Maybe some we do. Most, of course, we don't. Other people doing exactly what we're doing, other places. But together, we're the people, no matter where we come from, we're the ones that's going to bring this thing back. If it's possible, of course, and it's the will of God, we're going to bring this thing back. So I know I'm not a direct bloodline of anybody. There's nobody important to me. I'm a mutt.
No, but you're Anglo-Saxon if you're a member of those other groups that you spoke of, though.
Right.
And,
but let's
and,
say I came
and
from
point,
Africa
and, the,
and Arabia.
Well, if you were from Africa, you wouldn't be able to save this country. You have no authority to do so. Because
well, the point is
only the Anglo-Saxon has the right to do that. That's
okay,
the
you're saying
country.
That
that's
even,
the
even to
I'm
this
having.
Even to this day, you're saying Ed.
Yes, absolutely, because the
and
law has never been done
I'm
away
having.
With.
That's the problem I'm
hey
having.
Hey, guys, why don't you let Ed say what he's trying to say here? Because
no, I understand what he's trying to say.
No. We keep stepping on the guy, and he's trying to tell us something that we need to know. Okay? So let's all lay back and let him speak, all right?
Well, I just muted the room for 1 second. I just want to make this important point. The responsibility of what comes out of this room is up to me. I got to make sure that whatever comes through this room is the right thing. It's righteous. And it doesn't violate another person, no matter where they come from. Now, I'm not saying that that's what's happening, but I want to be crystal clear that nobody comes into this room, listens to this conversation, and feels that they've been violated and that they don't belong or they can't become part of us. So for that purpose, that's why I take over at some point. And it is what it is. That's my responsibility as host and creator of this forum. So let me unmute everyone, and we can go from there. My point is this, though. No one is excluded in my world. And I want to make sure we all agree on that. And as long as we all agree on that, then we're good. We're good. History is a different story. We're all unmuted.
I think you did a very good job of stating your position there, John, for the record. And that's good. And that is your responsibility as the creator of this room. I understand the sensitivities there. You're absolutely right. I mean, we can get into some, I don't know, maybe you should shut the recording off.
Oh, no.
At this point,
I wouldn't want to shut it off. It's got to continue and come to a conclusion.
Well, you know,
it's a good call. It's good talk.
Well, and we do have to be careful because there's people listening to this, and there's all kinds of people that could listen to this.
Yeah.
So we have to, when we make statements, we want to make sure we say what we mean what we say, you know, and we don't put stuff out that's too confusing, that gets us off track, for one thing, you know.
Well, I'd like to make a point that maybe corrects this whole thing. The Declaration of Independence, which is the founding document of America, preludes, is that the correct word?
Precludes.
Precludes?
I believe.
Okay, so it precludes everything. So when that statement was said, all men are created evil, well, they were. All men are created
evil.
Hearts of men are desperately wicked. No, all men were created.
I think that's right the first time.
All men were created equal. Okay, that's the first point of the creation of this country. Now, any act that is contrary to that can be made null and void. No matter what group of people did what, they operated under the Declaration of Independence ultimately, because that's the authority and the creation of this country. So that could, for the purpose of this conversation, that would trump whatever act comes later on that makes the other declarations that gives powers to a certain group of people. Anyone can enter into that power and claim the kingship.
So you're saying the Declaration makes a statement of purpose, and anything that comes after that is included in that purpose.
It,
right?
It's subject to that statement. It's subject to all men of created equal. It
mm-hmm.
is subject. Is it not?
That was a general. That was a general statement, folks. That statement was a general statement.
Well, let him go. Go ahead, Ed. Make your point.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The Declaration of Independence, when it said that, the framers recognized the fact that all men are created equal, but that did not mean that in this country that they were forming that all men would be created equal. I mean that all men would be equal in
well, then
status by law.
And you wouldn't get
that's
the blessings of God. Okay? And that would be it, and we wouldn't have the blessings of God. Even if people had that intention in their mind, that's not what's righteous, it's not what's right, and I take that and say it's worthless to me. It's irrelevant. All men are created equal. The truth
they
was
are.
Proclaimed, even if they tried to squeeze it a different direction. But I do agree. We had slaves. We had other problems. We had problems because we had evil amongst us. And men always have evil amongst us because we are in the kingdom of Satan. But you could be blessed in the kingdom of God as long as you do the righteous thing. And enough people are doing the righteous thing, you can have a pretty big area being blessed and protected by the hand of God. But the bottom line is this, and this is what we have to all agree on at some point, I hope. That is everyone is welcomed no matter where they come from, whatever geographical place they come from. Once they come into this country, they come in the right way, and their heart is what they want to become an American. And they see all of a sudden I can be a king. They understand that concept and they claim it. They got it. Do we all agree on that? Well, let's put it this way: is there anyone that disagrees with that?
Well, they're not really called kings in the old days. They were called.
I'm
masters.
One of the people then. They're claiming to be one of the
masters.
People, which is above
right.
the Constitution, not
right.
above, not a 14th Amendment person, above
right.
the Constitution, one of the people. One of the proclaimers of that declared, ordained and established, they now become partakers of the claiming and the establishment of the founding fathers, which is the spirit of what they're really chasing. Okay, then anyone can do that. Is there anyone that disagrees with that statement? I'm trying to be as clear as possible. So no one disagrees with that. Well, I'm a happy camper.
I think we should let Ed continue to finish his train of thought. You know, we keep breaking his rhythm, and it's just not going anywhere, you know?
I'm sorry.
That's right.
Well, again, you know, I just don't want to let certain points go until they're defined. And I'm
right. You know,
fine.
I mean, if
I'm happy to.
If we don't interrupt, maybe it would become clear when he completes his thought. That's what I'm trying to
I
say.
I understand that, but that thought could take long enough to have people
all
come
right.
in and out on us. That's
you know,
the point
John,
of trying to
being,
make.
John's being sensitive to the room, and I think he's doing a good job of keeping us where we need to be. And, we're talking about naturalization and all this stuff now, which, you know, wherever it came from, like he says, it's not going to make a big difference to what we're doing in our system, I don't think. I mean, I haven't heard the end of...
Right. I'm sorry. Let's let Ed finish then. I apologize for interrupting, but I had to.
Not a problem.
I understand why you interrupted, because what he's saying is that only an Anglo-Saxon can rest in the law, and I didn't know that's where he was going, but let's let him go.
Okay. There's I put up on the screen there a court case called Jones versus Timmer. It's actually a district court case, I believe, federal district court, and it was a single judge that made a determination in this case. And what he said, and this, and notice it's a 1993 case, that's not very old. And what he said was on page, let's see if I can find the page, on page 1232, I believe it is. This is what he said. And this was a 14th Amendment case, due process case. This is what he said. He said, quote, "The Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protects very few rights because it neither incorporates any of the Bill of Rights nor protects all rights of individual citizens." And he said, see slaughterhouse cases, and I think that's the only one. "Instead, this provision protects only those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government. It does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship." So you got two citizenships.
Well, you're
one
absolutely
is the
right.
Original
I'd
organic.
Like to make a comment on that, though.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
absolutely right. No, come on. Be quiet a second, all right? Listen, there's an important point to understand here, that these judges were talking about a jurisdiction, and the jurisdiction in this case was exactly what you're saying. It's a citizen, and looking at the 14th Amendment, and that's a totally different group of people, and they do not have rights. They have privileges, and
privileges,
they are subject
right.
to the laws
right.
of the United States. And you can come out from underneath that anytime, any day, when you wake up and say, wait a second, this is a fraud upon me. I am not. I don't have privileges. I have rights. I'm one of the people.
Yeah.
You see, now you woke up. Okay?
If you're an Anglo-Saxon, John, you're not. You don't have. You are a privileged person. You don't have privileges from somebody that granted them to you because the Anglo-Saxon created the government. So
right,
you have.
A lot of
you are a privileged person.
All right, I'm an Anglo-Saxon. I was underneath the influence of the 14th Amendment most of my life. I was a citizen of the United States. I was subject to their rules. I've been in the administrative court. They've kicked my ass all over the place.
Right.
And there was nothing I could do about it. But now
yeah, there is.
I woke up.
What you have to do is there's a presumption, a standing presumption. It has been a standing presumption for a long time in the whole of government, this whole country. There's a standing presumption that everybody's in a melting pot and that everybody's 14th Amendment. But that's not true. They're saying it is, and they're assuming it is for the purpose of their system. So what you have to do is when you go into a court situation, the very first document you file is a declaration of your citizenship and let them know I'm not a 14th Amendment citizen. I'm one of the state citizens of the original organic citizen.
I got your point, but it's a much simpler way to do this without alerting them in ways that they start frowning and coughing and going through all their wax. Look, it is very simple. I'm one of the Thornton hits it right on the button. You don't have to go into anything else.
They're not going to frown.
Exercise. I'm a son of God. I'm this and I'm that and the other thing. No, just get in and say, I'm one of the people in the state of New York, and as one of those people in this court of record, I'm suing or whatever A, B, and C, or whatever. Okay, so that's a very simple way of doing it, and I would say, you see, I have learned this from Thornton, and I tell you what, all my experience in life tells me he's right on this. I'm not touching that word citizen in any kind of a legal conversation. Outside of the legal conversation, I might use the word citizen, but for the purpose of not confusing anyone, I won't use it outside either, because people have got to understand they're people.
The word citizen, there's nothing wrong with that word. What it is that there's a problem with the sense of that word. You've got 14th Amendment citizens and you've got organic citizens. And
well,
so whenever you're talking about you...
If you're not careful with your language, that can confuse the appellate court when you get up to there, and they'll rule you in the wrong jurisdiction, and you're done.
But what you do is you say, I'm a citizen in the original organic sense.
But isn't it easy
that's
to,
how
to
you
say
do it.
To people? But that's a, you see, I think
no,
that's
no, because
I'll tell you
the
what.
People don't mean nothing.
I,
under the law,
well,
it don't mean
that's
nothing.
That's not true, because you define the word people as, I know in my, when I write my papers, if you go look at any of my papers, I start off with the people, you'll see a little number, it's usually number one or number two, because number
right.
one may be action at law, so I define action at law as a common law proceeding, but number two is who the people are, and it talks about being sovereign, being one of the people as sovereign, and it also gives the focus of we the people who are established and ordained. And so
you make it very clear
to be above, right, in the footnote, right above. So
right.
if you go in with the organic and all this other stuff, I want to tell you, they frown upon that. And all of a sudden, there's a game that goes on. There's also a mentality. And now you've opened up some conversation. You've brought it up. If you don't want to argue the point, don't bring it up. You've brought up points. They may argue that point, or they may not. But the bottom line is there's confusion with the word citizen. There's no confusion with the word people. None whatsoever, especially when you footnote its meaning and you point directly to a couple of major places, makes it clear you're above the Constitution. You're one of the creators. I'm the potter. You guys are the clay. You know, the government, the structure, everything is the clay. And
right.
and so, but I hear what you're saying. That is a way to do it, but I think it's, you see, if you can bypass all of that language.
You have
you
to bring up the law, John. John, you have to bring up the law because they don't recognize anything but law. Let me explain something. The courtroom, and I've had judges tell me this before when I was in the courtroom, they say, Mr. Fife, religion, politics, and philosophy, this is not a proper place for those three things. He said, the only thing that's proper in here is the law. That's it.
Well, he's a moron.
And so when you go in there, no, that's the way it is.
No,
and
but
so when you go
the
in there,
as,
you only bring up the law.
But he sees the law as statutes, but that's not true because founding father statements are maxims often. The Bible are maxims. That's common law. That's real.
Well, that's right. That's right. But see, the Bible was written right into our law, though.
Exactly.
So whenever you're quoting our law, whenever you're quoting the original organic law, you're quoting Scripture. You're doing the same
right.
thing.
Well,
so
we don't have to say anything about Scripture.
You don't have to bring the Scripture up.
But we don't have any written law save case law. And case
oh,
law.
Oh, we got loads of it. We got loads of it. Go back to the original statutes at large.
What written law do we have?
Go back to the statutes at large, the original statutes at large. They're the original law and the Constitution, too.
No, they're not. Not even. Look.
Yes, they are.
No.
Okay, the Constitution says so.
The Declaration of Independence is a common law document, but it is not, and it is the law of the land. It expresses the law of the land, and we hang off of it because it's nothing but maxims. And that's why it's worth anything.
Well, it was just a declaration. That was just to declare their separation. That had nothing to do with the establishment of the country. The establishment of the country was done by the Constitution or the original Articles of Confederation and then the Constitution.
Well,
the Declaration of Independence is not an establishment document. It's just a separation.
I disagree with that premise. The moment our founding fathers put their John Hancock on that document, they ended their ties with England and they became a new nation. Hold it. They became a new nation. Mm-hmm. And they got themselves a president right away. They started
Continental Congress.
There was the Continental Congress, and in any event, they started a structure. They didn't know what exactly they would be yet. They were hammering it out and working it out, trying to discover what. But they began with that document, and that document is the most important document in this country under common law. There is nothing that supersedes that document in this country as far as common law is going. Now, a part and parcel of that is also the Magna Carta and the Bible itself, because when you read that document, you see all the philosophers, the great works of the philosophers of the 17th century, who all focused in on the Bible and the Magna Carta and many other things that took place. They also went into maxims and they extended logic and came to conclusions that were undeniable. And this is, you know, when you read the Declaration of Independence, and you go in and start looking at these philosophers and start reading their books, and say, oh, that's where Jefferson got that idea from. Wow. You see, because we're all built on the shoulders of giants. But that document was the beginning of this country, and it has to be the most important document because it starts off, you know, with the fact that we're all created equal and we're under God, created in His image. And that is the essence of who and what we are.
Well, we're all created equal, okay, and I agree with you, John, on that point, except that, think about it a minute, if they thought the blacks were equal, how come they had them as slaves?
Well, I don't care what they had or didn't have, the blacks
are. Think about it a minute.
Well, they were born into that. Hold it. They were born into that, and I don't know, if you look at the founding fathers, they've all given up the slaves. Jefferson was the only one left with slaves, and I don't know what exactly was going on in the mind of Jefferson on that. But I could tell you what, the way they have erased history, there might have been a few statements they were able to annihilate and never got into modern-day man, is not in any books or anything. But we do know certain things about their slaves when we read the writings of his daughter and we read Jefferson and the relationship and different things and thought lines. He did have some crazy anticipation or thoughts about these people, but that was a personal, direct experience looking at you know, life and coming out with a conclusion, and his conclusion may have been right for that time and those people he was dealing with, which was his slaves, but maybe not for the whole world or that whole particular race line. But the point is this: we don't really know what was in the heart of Jefferson, and we do know that his slaves did love him dearly, hugely, hugely. You read his daughter's papers; these guys, they worship the feet of Jefferson. So apparently he treated them very well. Jefferson himself said his very first thought that he remembered was being carried in the arms of one of the slaves. It was his first memory that he took off into adulthood with him. Okay, so there was a connection there, but you also got to remember he was born into that world, and it's a world that had to be changed. And who knows? Maybe he freed his slaves or was gone, and they preferred being with him. Who knows? I don't know. So I'm not going to judge the man, but I will tell you one thing. He's the guy who wrote the Declaration of Independence, okay? Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, you may say, well, you see, he meant this. But even if he meant this, God has a way of making even the jackass speak the truth.
Well,
so
what he understood, John, was this, that all men are created equal in general, but every person has different status depending on what nation he's in. For example, he knew that the Anglo-Saxon had top status in this country. No one else did. But if you go to Africa or you go to China or you go to, I don't know whether any other countries, there's only three races of people. But if you go to those other countries where you have Chinese or Japanese or black or whatever, those people might be sovereign in their own country, but they're not sovereign in this country. That's the point. See,
I disagree with
not
you
not all people are sovereign in this country. You couldn't have that because if you had you'd have a confused country.
Look at
you can't have that.
In the reality of this world under God, all people are sovereign when they come to a state of mind of being so. Then they are sovereign. Now you could say, I'm a king and I could do whatever I want, and you could be in your own country, you could be in this country, be anywhere else, and they could say, and the powers that may be, okay, you could be a king, but we're taking your head. Well, I'm a king and I'm free. Whack, takes his head. That doesn't change the fact that he's a king and he's free.
Well, if
okay?
you went to England,
so,
John, if you went to England, if you
it's
went to England, would you be sovereign? If you went to England, would you be sovereign?
I'm absolutely sovereign. I wouldn't be recognized as sovereign, but I am sovereign.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about because of the law. We're not talking about whether you are sovereign or not.
But when they come to America and become part of America and they say I'm sovereign, they're sovereign. Now, it may or may not be true you're not recognized as sovereign until you become part of this society, whatever
under
exercise.
The law.
Right,
yeah,
whatever exercise that is about, well, that's fine. I can appreciate right. to that to some degree. But you know what? If that person who's visiting this country, okay, and they committed some kind of crime or was accused of some kind of crime, they're going to get all the rights that a person that was born and raised in this country gets, and rightly so, because they're created in the image of God. Now, they may not be able to exercise their rights in certain ways because they're not. A part of this society, and they have to go through some whatever exercise of law they have. That's what we decided as a people. People have to do in order to become one of us. That's fine, but they will be given the human rights, the unalienable rights in a court of law should they be accused of a crime.
Well,
so
they get
that
some
makes them
they get
sovereign
some privileges. They get some pieces. They get some pieces of what the sovereign people get, but they don't get the whole.
Well,
hey,
you might
they only get a slice of the pie.
They can't have the 14th Amendment privileges. That's not possible because they haven't become a U.S. citizen yet. So they can't have that. So they have to have something. They're not having privileges which are called
civil
rights.
Well, an alien is protected.
Rights.
Right. An alien is protected, John, for a certain length of time under the Naturalization Act. If he comes here, he has like 5 years or whatever it is. To become a citizen, if he gives his intent to become a citizen,
but he's
then he has like five years to that he can stay here if he wants to become a citizen. But if he don't become a citizen within the 5 years, guess what? His butt is out of here. He's deported.
You might be right, but he also has the opportunity to have the rights under God. And it now comes to a state of mind in which he exercises should he be brought into a court. He may be able to be brought into a Nisi Prius court. And if in his state of mind he's got his rights, unalienable rights under God, then he could challenge the jurisdiction and win.
He does, but not in this country. That's what I'm saying. And the framers knew that.
If his feet are planted in this country and he's not a citizen of this country and he's accused of a crime, and he goes to deal with that crime, and he's in a Nisi Prius court, and he understands what's going on, and he or she, and can claim the fact that they don't have jurisdiction, challenge it, fight it, they would beat it. Now, I know, you know, as a matter of fact, Thornton spoke a little bit, this might have been the conversation it really was on, because someone had come from Canada and says, I live in Canada, and wanted to have the being sovereign and so on and so forth. Now, he wasn't so clear on it either, okay? But I'll tell you what, it comes from God no matter how you do it. And if it doesn't, if you can say that this person can't have it from God, then someone could say you can't have it from God. And you see, that's a problem.
Well, no, God gives different rights to different people, John. It's true that there's, in other words, the way you're talking, this guy could come over from another country and just stay here and claim that he's
sovereign. I'm not saying that. No, no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that person could come here for whatever term of time, okay, be in this country, be accused of a crime, okay, go into the court system, and he's going to be dealt with under he's going to have rights, okay? Now, they're not going to be able to push the 14th Amendment right in. Now, you know, Ed says that there is some provision for aliens under a certain, you know, which would be statutory rights, which would give them civil rights, which would be privileges, okay? And but he also has the right, because he might believe himself to be a child of God. He's become conscious of the fact that I've got my rights directly from God, and he can claim them, and now you can't take that away from him. Even though he may have to leave the country when he's done because his time period is up or whatever's going on there, that's a whole different story. But the point is he should be able to beat that court if he's in an Nisi Prius court. He's not living under statutes. He's living under common law.
You can't go to China. Think about it a minute. If you went to China, Could you tell them what to do and tell them that you were sovereign in their country?
I am as free in China and as free in Russia as I am right here. Now, they may put me in a prison, and I may be getting bread and water, and they may take my head the next day, but I'm still free.
But under law, what I'm saying is under law, you wouldn't be, period. You couldn't be under law. You have to be. You're a visitor. And anybody that comes to this country is a visitor, at least until they become a citizen. You know,
but
if they're qualified.
No, all men are created equal. We may not be able to come to a conclusion to this. I know in my mind that I'm pretty clear on it. All men are created equal. Either that's a truth, and that is a maxim that cannot be changed by anything, or it's selective. Maybe this man is equal, and that man will be equal tomorrow, because that's when he becomes an actual partner in this country or something, but today he's not. No, that doesn't make sense. Water cannot run uphill. That's true all the time. Not half the time, not some of the time, all of the time. All men are equal. That's true all of the time. Not half of the time, part of the time, some of the time.
You know, John, you're right in what you're saying, but
I know
is you know, you go to another country or somebody comes here, No.
You go to another country.
You're free. Hello. You're free, you know, as a human being. You have the rights, you know, as a man. But according to the laws of the land that you're in, you're subject to that.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just make this final point, because we agree on that.
Come here, buddy.
In China, that is absolutely true. But in America, it's not true. Because we have a maxim. And that maxim is the founding document, the founding beginning of this country. All men are created equal. All is all. Not all inclusive, not exclusive.
So nobody's
okay?
arguing that.
Can't
okay.
Well, that means, a Chinaman can come to this country tomorrow, be accused of a crime the next day, and can stand on common law. Because that's
listen,
the law.
Listen, you can't go to China and claim rights under God, because they don't
correct.
Recognize your God. That's
you
cut your head off.
Yeah.
There's only two nations in this world that were consecrated under the Ten Commandments, and that's Israel and America. That's the experiment in the world since the beginning of time.
Well,
right?
I think England was too.
Well,
I think England still has
no, but they had a king, and they didn't say they said.
Yeah, that was a problem.
As long as you had a king that was Christian, it was under God. But if you had a king that was a a pagan or something and he wanted to put you into slavery, you're a subject. You had no recourse. Listen, the Jews were under the Egyptians when they were there. They were the Egyptian slaves. And it says right in the Bible, you got to be a good slave. Now, let me finish. I'm playing the devil's advocate here a little bit.
Okay, so people
in China can come to the realization that God is the creator of all things, and that being all men are created equal, they could do their own Declaration of Independence and claim rights out from outside of their government, kick their government aside, and say, listen, we're doing this because we're inaugurating this new nation under God, but that would be up to them. You know, the devil took Christ up to the mountain, and he showed him all the nations of the world. And he said, bow down and adore me, and I'll give you these. Well, why could he give them them? Because he owned them. So unless you got a nation that God is running, your rights don't mean crap anyplace else. In other words, they have to be under God's law. Now, America and Israel are the closest to that. China is probably the furthest. I mean, you got India has a caste system, which is probably, I don't want to get down on India or anything, but that's a tough system. You can't even get out of your caste in India if you're a traditional Indian society. If you're born a stall mucker, that's what you live and die, and that's what your kids are, and they can never leave that caste system. There's a tough system, right? Now, how do you preach this to an Indian that believes in a caste system? I mean, now you're starting to get into, and God did bequeath certain things that he would recognize on different nations.
When in Rome, who was the Romans do? That's all.
Well, listen, nations are punished in their own time, and they're rewarded in their own time. They're treated different than men because they are different because, they're a nation of men. And I mean, you know, he says, if my people just turn their face to me, I would forgive them and heal their land. That doesn't mean that the people that did the wrong things would be forgiven, but the nation as a whole would be. You're still responsible for your sin of murder or whatever else you did on a personal level. But if a nation repents, he could say, listen, I let all that go and I'm going to heal your land. That's up to God. So, you know, God does recognize slavery under the law. They recognized it when the Egyptians had the Jews. So we know that we can operate under that. The American experiment is that we're saying that under God, as a creation of God, that we can get together and declare this piece of land under his law. And that gives us our rights. But you can't take that anywhere in the world with you. It just doesn't. It doesn't follow. Unless you're going to convince that whole nation to be under God, like he said, they just cut your head off.
Let me ask you a question. What you're saying, and I presume Ed's saying, and maybe most people are saying, that when you go to China, you're under the law of their land. Period. Right. You're stuck. You can claim freedom, and you're still going to lose your head. That doesn't mean you're not free, even though you lost your head. Okay?
Well, the only reason China wouldn't have touched you 50 years ago is because if they did, they were afraid of America's power.
Right. But okay, but the point is when you go to another country, you're under the law of their land.
Yes.
Right.
Okay,
yes.
So when people come to our country, they're under the law of our land too, aren't they?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And what does all the case law say the law of the land is?
It's the original, organic stuff.
The Constitution. So anybody who comes into this country and one day, the next day, if they're charged with a crime, guilty or not, they go to court. And if it's a nisi prius court and they're conscious of the facts, they turn around, I challenge jurisdiction. You don't have jurisdiction over me. What do you mean we don't have jurisdiction over me? You know what doesn't have jurisdiction over them anyway? Because they're not a U.S. citizen under the 14th Amendment. But then Ed says that there are provisions for that, some act has provisions for that, to give aliens a certain provision to give them civil rights, and that's fine. He could take them if he wants. But if he's under the law of the land, those provisions, those acts, those statutes, those codes are not the law of the land. You know, that's nice rules and their statutes.
I agree with that because there was some discussion going on with different people. When they said, oh, those terrorists shouldn't be given lawyers and they shouldn't be given this and that because they're not Americans. Well, that's not the point. The point is they're here under our law. And under our law, all men are created equal. Now, under China's law, not all men are created equal. Some are leaders and some are slaves.
Okay, so you and I agree.
Right. No, I agree.
Some of them are visitors.
I don't think that you can tell somebody that they don't have rights under our Constitution. I don't think that we should treat foreign criminals different than we treat American criminals. I think that...
Right,
that
but remember...
If we have such a good system, what those people are saying, that those people that came over here and did this should not be tried in our courts as a normal with the normal rights of a citizen, what they're saying is somehow we're at a disadvantage to get to the truth using our laws under God. That's a sacrilege. What they're saying is our system is not good enough to try a guilty man under the law, that somehow they're going to get away if we let them have the same rights that we have. That there's some kind of a benefit under this law that they could get away with their crime, so to speak, if we give them the same rights that you have or I have. And that's not true.
There's two due processes. Two due processes. One is under the Fifth Amendment of the original Constitution, if you'll read. And there's a due process under the 14th Amendment also.
But the 14th Amendment was not the Bill of Rights.
No, it wasn't. But what I'm saying is it has a due process in each one of those. And what I'm saying is that both due processes do not provide the same exact element.
We all agree with you on that. We all agree with you.
Okay,
so what you're doing is a fraud, and when you come into due process, which I think is the Fifth Amendment, isn't it?
Yeah, the Fifth Amendment has the original organic due process.
Right. So
that due process was on the table way before 1776. It's a
You're
phrase,
absolutely right. But it was
it's Charles Stewart from Oregon.
But it was established.
Due process is a phrase from Magna Carta that was in existence way before America, the USA was founded, and that's what the due process phrases used all throughout our documents mean. It referenced back to the earlier law.
Well, you're absolutely right, because that was in the hearts and minds of our founding fathers. They carried that. They were trying to get justice through the king, and they wasn't getting it, and that
yeah,
due process
yeah,
is what they were
back.
Arguing about. And
they
wrote their
existing
papers,
law that came from our common law of England.
Yeah, I understand, but let me just tie that together, what you're saying, because we do agree with you on that. They brought it they were here in this country with it in their heart and in their mind, and they argued the king trying to get due process. They wasn't getting it, and that's what made them write the Declaration of Independence. And they transferred that immediately right into this country, due process, just by the statement that we're all created equal. Right there brings us into the game plan, okay? So you're absolutely right. And it comes and it goes back further than the Magna Carta.
Yeah, yeah. You're back to the laws of Israel, really. And,
absolutely.
But Ed and I have crossed swords before. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Well,
you're absolutely right.
You got another hot potato going here, and dang it, John's got the moral and legal high ground on you, and you're not recognizing it like you should.
Well, there are certain things that people have to witness for themselves, and I don't tell anybody to believe what I say. All I tell them is go look and see if I'm telling you the truth or whether I'm lying.
We've already looked.
That's what I tell
you. You're the one that's not looking.
I've already done my looking. We
have consensus on this point by now, and we're in the right and you're in the wrong.
I've done all the looking.
No. See, John, you got a problem here. Ed's got a big old brick wall in his brain, and he won't budge on it.
Who's this talking now?
Charles Stewart from Oregon.
Charles?
What?
Oh, yeah,
Charles?
You've been here
before. Yeah, we've seen you before, Charles.
I recognize his voice. Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure who was talking.
Is that Carl?
No, that's Gerard.
Oh, it's Gerard. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Gerard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of supporting Ed there, too, aren't you, Gerard?
Well, no, I'm just playing the devil's advocate. I just agreed with
you. Not healthy. You ought to do what you sincerely believe, especially the discussion here is getting kind of intense, and, you know, there's more than enough devils already here. You know?
That's right. He's in the air.
Well, I think John, I said, I don't know if you were here, when John stopped the conversation, because he didn't like where it was going. And I complimented with that for holding the control on the moral ground, because I understood where he was going and why he was going there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Ed and I have got a long history on debating this very same point. And, you know, I respect Ed's right to have a differing point, but on this particular issue here, we don't have consensus and we can't work together, because Ed's got, he's entrenched in a Romanistic-based, it allows the Romanism to creep in. He doesn't understand the purity of the common law that doesn't allow for any slave trading or inferior status of the other races. Because
well, Charles, let me ask you a question. Why, if it didn't include the slave trade, then why in the world did we have slavery up till what, 1860, whatever it was, 63, whatever, 64? How come of that? If the common law didn't include it.
Because a lot of people were refusing to harmonize with the fundamental law that the nation is solidly based on. The individual states had the right to work this out and become enlightened. Some of the states, like Maryland and stuff, were Catholic states. You know, there was different levels of competence in the individual states. The states were sovereign entities, and they were to be allowed to work it out for themselves. The Constitution, as well as the Articles of Confederation and the Declaration of Independence, only stated fundamental principles. And some of those individual states, they had brick walls in their head just like you do, and they were allowed the time to work it out how to apply the newer principles of enlightenment in their individual states for themselves. The feds didn't come in with big old guns and start shooting them. They had big enough problems just getting the dang British out of here.
Well,
the,
know,
the framers had slaves.
Let me ask you something. When God created Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, was there any slaves?
No.
Did God create slaves?
No.
Slavery is a condition of men.
Yes.
And they bring it upon themselves at some point. Now the sins of the parents is on the children.
The people
listen.
That conquer them bring it on. Nobody embraces slavery. Are you crazy?
Slavery, but listen, but God allowed it as what?
But that's not the same as authorizing it. He doesn't legitimize it. Just because the devil's in here and he touches the heart of men and gives them guns and enslaves other people doesn't mean that's law.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that sometimes you become subject to a condition that is brought on by men that you have to function under.
Well, that's not law. That's enslavement. It's a fundamental natural law principle. If you read Blackstone, there's fundamental principles of natural law here that reign over the entire planet. There are obligations in all nations at all times under all conditions. This is fundamental Anglo-American law 101 that people like Ed and yourself should comprehend. If you
and I understand that, and I'm agreeing with you. What I'm saying is God didn't create us to be slaves. If we fell into slavery, it was due to the condition of men.
It was due to the condition of some men, the people that advocate slavery. The general public consensus was that there's no such thing as slavery. Get that poop out of here.
I understand.
Blacks have been slaves. You know how far back blacks were slaves?
Off point and immaterial, Ed.
It's right on point. Because let me tell you something.
No. Ask John. Is it on point or is he doing another stupid thing again?
Well, look at even the Jews were slaves for a while. God permitted that. So
that doesn't mean God authorized it.
That's right. He did authorize it. Well, he permitted it or allowed
it. God that
often he does it as a judgment. But we can't say we know with the Jews it was a judgment. God put a judgment on the Jews. We're not saying he put a judgment on the black men. He could have done that in order to expand Christianity into the black race. Who knows? I have no idea.
The Bible, man. You can't rely on all of that kind of stuff, man. The slave traders have crept into the biblical text. That's why Jesus condemned the scribes, because there's bad things in there, man.
Right. I agree. Yeah, the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? And until the day star rises in the heart and then the Spirit of God dwells in you, until that happens, there's all kinds of darkness and you're subject to anything.
Listen, the Jews were subject to the Egyptians when they were under slavery, and that was a punishment. God used the Egyptians to punish the Jews.
No. That's like saying God used the devil to punish Job. God didn't do it. He just backed off and allowed it to happen.
When the Philistines attacked the Jews, God, it's even written, he used them. He didn't make them do it, but he always punished them. He said, can the axe rise above the woodcutter?
Well, I dare say there's errors in the biblical text that have crept in because of the scribes and the slave traders that paid the scribes to alter the text.
Well, let me just pipe in here just for a minute. This recording's been going a long time. I don't know if anybody's ever going to listen to this recording. So I'm going to end the recording, but the conclusion of the room, and I think everybody, well, most everybody at least, but I think everybody agrees that anybody can claim freedom as soon as they become conscious of the fact that they can, and they could be free and defend themselves free, you know, and that's the bottom line.
And that was our manifest destiny, to spread that through the world, that idea, right?
Okay, with that, let me end the conversation on the tape. We can continue this conversation, but I want to end the tape right now, so give me 1 second to end this.
Record.